Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! About 2 minutes past the hour coming up on that. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's, wow. Have we really and for true made it to the middle of the week? Is it that time again? Is it time for me to get out the funny hat? Why, apparently it is. That's right, brothers and sisters. You know, you all know what Wednesday means here on the Horn. It's time for prayer meeting.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah, brethren and sistren, come on down the blood-red carpet to the altar here and lay your hands upon the subwoofers and feel the healing rays of common sense a-blowing through you. I am Bishop Bob, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Amen. And amen. It is prayer meeting night right here on the Head On Radio Network. And you know what? It's real easy, usually, to start with ridiculous fundamentalist Christianity. You know, the phony Christianity, the fake Christianity, the dummied up, ginned up, faked up, rubed up Christianity. The Christianity that has a whole heck of a lot more to do with the midway at a carnival than it does with the salvation of the personal soul. That's easy to do. It is not, however, where we begin this evening. Nope, 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 nope. No, we begin with, what do you have to call them when they're affiliated with a politician? What in the media gasm? What do they call Reverend Jeremiah Wright? Oh, that's right, Barack Obama's spiritual advisor. Well, we begin this evening with John McCandidate's spiritual advisor. who is, of course, Pester John Hagee. Pastor John Hagee is a money shuffler. Pastor John Hagee is a money changer. Pastor John Hagee is a charlatan and a fraud. But more than that, seeing as how, yeah, he admitted it, he confessed it, you know, confessing, you know, they do a lot of that, confessing. Pastor John said that Senator John came to him, you saw this a couple of weeks ago, and fairly begged him for his endorsement. And because Pastor John Hagee is a man of God committed to conservative social principles. And because he lusts after power in ways that would make a guy going into a bordello blush. Pastor John Hagee gave his endorsement to John McCain. The McCain did it. The McCain-Turian candidate. John McSame. John McBush. I don't know if there was any ring kissing or the kissing of anything else that was involved in that process, but you know, seeing as how they're right-wing Republicans, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, John Hagee's going to spread the love. That's right. He is the founder and national chairman of Christians United for Israel, Queefy, I'm not sure. He made a trip to Israel recently, taking hundreds of credulous fools with him who were willing to pony up the bucks to go, you know, with a nice little gratuity for Brother Hagee. And there they hooked up with keynote speaker and former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Kill All the Arabs You Can See Netanyahu. What was their purpose? Their purpose was to have themselves a little old rally. Yeah, they was a rallying. They were rallying in support of Jerusalem remaining united and under Jewish control. Huh? No, I think what he means is united and under Israeli government control. Because after all, to be Jewish is not to be Israeli. Right? I mean, all of Alma Kogan is dead, but only part of the class of dead people are Alma Kogan? You remember the old Monty Python logic skit? That's how I learned a lot of logic. God bless Monty Python. Obvious, one might think, but not to my wife. For given the proposition that all mackerel are fish and all fish live underwater, my wife will not conclude that all mackerel live under the water, but that if she buys kippers it will not rain, or that trout live in trees, or even that I do not love her anymore. This I call pure BS. Yeah, that's good. It was on the album version of the trailer to the film to the soundtrack of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and it was a brilliant piece. So what he means is he wants Jerusalem to remain under the control of the Israeli government, preferably the Israeli government run with an iron fist by Benjamin Netanyahu, because that's what that was. That wasn't a rally about Jerusalem. That was a campaign rally for Benjamin Netanyahu. Hence the following statement. Public opinion in Israel has swung heavily toward no more concessions, and it's understandable why. And I think Benjamin Netanyahu is sort of personifying that resistance among the Israeli people to give up any more land, and he's seeing it correctly as a threat to their national security. Well, 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 well. See, Pastor John didn't just take 100 credulous idiots who don't have the first beginning of an understanding of that poor, benighted, sick region. He took $6 million with him. saying that he would give it to Israeli causes. Sounds like he's become his own little personal political action committee, doesn't it, you? He won't give it straight to Netanyahu, because, you know, the Israelis actually probably have laws about, you know, that kind of smarmy, seedy, filthy political money entering their process. But he'll give it to a guy who gives it to a guy who'll give it to Benjamin Netanyahu, who will campaign for him or something like that. I don't know. Maybe he'll give it to this guy. Gonna take me a minute. Too many tabs. Just a second here. God, I remember the days when I used to print out stories. Yeah, maybe he'll give it to Rabbi Mordecai Eliyahu, who is the former Sephardi chief rabbi. And he recently marked the one-month anniversary of the attacks at the Merkaz Harav Rabbinical Seminary by offering up a few words of peace and healing. He told the crowd as he marked that 1 month anniversary. A 1 month anniversary is kind of a contradiction in term, because anniversary is Latin and it comes from the Latin word for year, so it's a 1 month year marking, huh? English troubles. Anyway, he offered words of peace and compassion and understanding on that 1 month mark from the killing at that seminary. Thanks to Betsy for sending this along. I couldn't believe this. I wonder if it's the pernicious effect of American religious fundamentalism, you know, getting its nose under the tent of here are the words of peace and healing. Even when we seek revenge, it is important to make one thing clear. The life of one yeshiva boy is worth more than the lives of 1,000 Arabs. The Talmud states that if Gentiles rob Israel of silver, they will pay it back in gold. And all that is taken will be paid back in folds. But in cases like these, there is nothing to pay back, since, as I said, the life of one yeshiva boy is worth more than the lives of 1,000 Arabs. He also sought to establish a life to yeshiva ratio, calling on the Israeli government to decree that for every life lost in the attack, another yeshiva and community will be built. Jonathan Turley, at his blog, jonathanturley.org, notes, if nothing else, Eliyahu seems to have finally bridged a gap with Islamic extremists and shown some shared hateful principles. I really do. I believe this is the pernicious effect of people like Pastor Hagee and his ceaseless preaching of hatred and blood and death, his constant reference to, for instance, the Roman Catholic Church as the whore of Babylon and a false cult. This is what happens. This is what you get when the preachers of blood and death and destruction and murder and mayhem and slaughter creep into a dialogue and a stricken political social situation that didn't need any gasoline thrown on its already blazing fire. That's right. Rabbi Eliyahu wants to kill 1,000 Arabs for every yeshiva boy. I'm assuming that there were no yeshiva girls. Probably a little bit of sexism left over there. So that's a nice place to start prayer meeting tonight. You know, a little bit of smiting going on. Imagine if he got his way. Imagine if he got his way. Brother. But that's not the end of it. No, not by any stretch of the imagination. We got plenty of hate here at home, too. Brought to you, of course, by the religion industry. And I want to go back to a story that John Fox touched on during last night's horn section out of Illinois. And I want to remind you that nobody gets a pass, at least not from me. Because in Illinois, there is a member of the Illinois legislature called Monique Davis. Representative Monique Davis. And Representative Monique Davis is a Democrat. Yes, sirree, Bob. She's a Democrat. And she was present. She represents some borough in Chicago. She was present during a hearing at which a man who is referred to as atheist activist Rob Sherman was invited to testify. And he didn't beat on their doors. They came and asked him. And it was before the House State Government Administration Committee. And frankly, there's not enough story here to lay out the full truth or the full facts even. Screw truth. We're into facts here. Truth can be pulled like taffy. Facts are far more immutable. But he was testifying under invitation when Representative Monique Davis interrupted him, informing him, quote,
"What you have to spew and spread is extremely dangerous. It's dangerous for our children to even know that your philosophy exists. This is the land of Lincoln, where people believe in God. Get out of that seat. You have no right to be here."
I'm sorry. Why do I ascribe Southern accents to all my idiots? My bad, fellow Southerners. I apologize.
"What you have to spread and spew is extremely dangerous. It's dangerous for our children to even know that your philosophy exists. This is the land of Lincoln, where people believe in God. Get out of that..."
Yeah, because I know I'm right on that one, because at least on the pronunciation of God, because I remember Dan Aykroyd in the Blues Brothers movie. We got a half a pack of cigarettes, quarter tank of gas. It's night and we have sunglasses on. We're on a mission from God. You got to say that. God.
This is the land of Lincoln where people believe in God. Get out of that seat. You have no right to be here. We believe in something. You believe in destroying. You believe in destroying what this state was built upon.
Isn't it funny how it's always the religious people attacking the people who aren't religious? Isn't that just funny? Isn't it funny how it's religiously insane people who refuse to get medical treatment for 15-month-old babies with curable pneumonia so that they end up killing the child? Isn't it funny how it's always the religious people who ignore a diabetic coma until the child dies because they pray it to death? Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny how a failed cleric from the Russian Orthodox Church winds up killing 5 million of his own countrymen? Isn't it funny how a confirmed Roman Catholic from Austria gets hold of the reins of power in Germany and winds up killing 6 million Jews and gypsies and homosexuals? Isn't that funny? I don't mean funny, haha. I mean funny strange. Just kinda odd, isn't it? Can you imagine? Can you imagine for one moment that if Representative Monique Davis had been an atheist and directed her comments toward some fundamentalist, be they Christian, Jewish, or Muslim, or any other flavor for that matter, you know, with six you get apocalypse. Can you imagine the outcry that would have gone up? That person would be on the run for his or her life now. Nowhere would be safe for that person because the followers of Jesus or Allah or Yahweh or the Buddha or Ganesh or Rama or Shiva or, you know, Huitzilopochtli or Inti or Coyote Trickster God would hunt that person down and slaughter them and spread their scattered parts to the four corners of the earth. Just amazing. You want to hear Monique Davis for yourself?
Chicago.
I don't know how old that church is. It's over 100 years old, I believe. I think the church, regardless to what it's being used for now, is a building that deserves to be preserved historically. Because in our
what? What? The atheist is... What? Huh? Let's try this again.
Yes, ma'am. One of the great musicians of all time.
And
Chicago.
I don't know how old that church is. It's over 100 years old, I believe. I think the church, regardless to what it's being used for now, is a building that deserves to be preserved historically. Because in our community, it has great value.
Yes, ma'am.
Great value. Historical value. So, you know, I don't know what you have against God, but some of us don't have much against Him. We look forward to Him and His blessings. And it's really a tragedy. It's tragic.
Huh? His blessings? What, God's going to come to the hearing room and pass out M&Ms or something? I don't know.
When a person who is against anything related to God... They want to fight. They want to fight prayer in school. I don't see you fighting guns in school. You know?
What? You idiot. I don't see you fighting guns in school. Well, you know, maybe he's not the gun in school fighting guy, but being a rationalist and an atheist, I'll bet he'd be the first one to tell you that guns aren't a good idea in school. Because your average atheist is a whole lot smarter than your average Monique Davis.
I'm trying to understand the philosophy that you want to spread in the state of Illinois. This is the land of Lincoln. This is the land of Lincoln where people believe in God, where people believe in protecting their children. You know,
yeah, because atheists won't protect their children. The minute they're born, we just put them out on the road. You know, just like, you know, like something out of ancient Greek mythology. Find the nearest snow-capped mountain and lay the baby out there, because we're atheists and, you know, we don't care for our children. You twit!
Don't want, in my opinion, what you have to spew and spread is extremely dangerous. It's dangerous.
What's
it's
dangerous, ma'am?
Dangerous to the progression of this state. And it's dangerous for our children to even know that your philosophy exists. Mm. That you will go to court to fight kids having an opportunity to be quiet for a minute. But damn it, you'll go to school to fight for them to keep guns out of their hands. I am fed up. Get out of that seat.
Thank you for sharing your perspective with me. And I'm sure that if this matter does go to court, the record will...
Clap for Jesus, everybody. Clap!
Right to be here. We believe in something. You believe in destroying.
That's right.
You believe in destroying what this state was built upon.
Well, you made an assertion. Let me respond to it.
I want you to focus only on your conversations with the governor's staff. Other stuff, I think, is superfluous at this point. What we want you here to talk about today is the grant to the Loop Lab School.
Okay.
So Representative Dugan was asking you questions about who you spoke with and when.
Dear God. You mean to tell me that that poor man had to sit there and get reamed out by that idiot, Monique Davis, and didn't even get a chance to respond? Holy smokes. Of course, that's the way it is with people who refuse to subscribe to the fairy tales in this country. They're second-class citizens. They don't have any rights. They're attacked, they're threatened, they're hunted down. I had a conversation earlier today. Somebody said to me, you know, Bob, once you get past do unto others as you would have them do unto you, you're pretty much just organizing a country club for people that you can let in and isolating the ones that you can't, that you can keep out. Just a country club without the nice golf course or the swimming pool or the ballroom. But then again, with modern mega churches, they've got the golf course and the swimming pool and the ballroom and the bowling alley and the water slide. Never let it be said that I give a pass to Democrats when they're idiots too. Reverend David writes from South Carolina, Bob, by the way, I was ordained by the Universal Life Church November 16th, 2004. Same church ordained Cooley from the DBTs, and he performed a marriage ceremony. I'm clergy, bro. I get all the good parking spots. Just see how it works. I don't have enough of whatever it takes to make me a man of God. Primarily, the larceny gene. Oh, I'm not sure if she's... That may be a misprint. Maybe she's not Representative Monique Davis. Maybe she's Reverend Monique Davis. No, sad to say, people actually sent her to Springfield, Illinois, to spew that kind of crap. We are so not safe. We are in the eternal struggle between tastes great and less filling. And the normal people are in the middle. And it is getting kind of narrow in here. Wow. Just wow. So, that's not all there is. No, we've got enough to do prayer meeting for another hour or so. Maybe more. But I did want to let you know that there's something rather cool coming up. Nice little conversation on the way. Going to be talking with Bryce Phillips from down WQRZ way. He's the station manager of WQRZ down in Waveland, Mississippi. You can go to WQRZ.org and you can see what his studio looked like after Katrina. Here's a news flash. It doesn't look any better. But it may soon. It may soon. So that's coming your way long about the top of the hour. Let's take a little break. And we'll come back. We'll come back with more prayer meeting right here on America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice, right here on the Horn. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Thank you, Brother Dwight, for that lovely, lovely offering from the choir. Praise Jeebus. I'll tell you what. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the program.
Praise Jeebus.
Praise, brother.
What's up, Bob?
What's going on?
Not much. Just wanted to update you on some of the news that was going on down here. We recently had our Tuesday Democrat meeting down here in Georgia.
Oh, yeah?
Down here in the middle of Jeebus land.
Yeah, well, I know.
But I had a really interesting story I just wanted to share with people.
Okay.
There's actually a gentleman down there. As you can imagine, of course, you have us 12 Democrats getting to meet in a room, and of course you've got, you know, the Republicans who rent out their big huge building and whatnot for all of them that we got down here. To say we're outnumbered is something of an understatement.
You're lucky, but you're not meeting in a phone booth, Vince.
Well, but you know, here's the really surprising thing is, you know, when we do start, you know, whenever we do have festivals and parades down here, we set up a booth and whatnot, and, you know, sometimes we occasionally get booed around and whatnot. Okay, it's more than sometimes. It's almost a daily occurrence. But we do actually meet a great deal of people who are either nonpartisan, as in they don't really side with either the Republicans or the Democrats, but there are actually a lot of people around here who self-identify as Democrats. They're just not all that active and kind of keep their heads down.
Right.
But anyways, one of these guys who the story I heard at the meeting yesterday, one of these gentlemen who's kind of nonpartisan and whatnot kind of thought, you know, had the idea, well, why don't we get something going together and whatnot? I'm not entirely sure how the genesis of the idea came about. But the idea basically got to be made, well, let's do something to show people that, you know, we can come together and do something as part of the community, and, you know, while we have our differences, et cetera. And there's this landmark building we have down here called Orange Hall. It's a really old house. I mean, was built like in the, like, 1700s sometimes. I mean, it's really old. And because of the very, you know, it's got a fence around it that's pretty much been there for, you know, centuries. And, because of the very nature of the construction of the thing, it needs a fairly good amount of upkeep to keep it going. So they said, well, let's get the Democrats of Camden County and the Republicans together and quote unquote mend the fence. And the Democrats were kind of like, oh yeah, let's do that, yeah. The Republicans sat around for 2 months debating it and then finally said no. And you know, when asked what their reason was,
can't wait.
They're up to something.
The Democrats from the phone booth?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're up to something.
We were up to something. There was more to it than just trying to get together for kumbaya. We were up to something.
Well, in a way, Vince, you're probably ahead of the game with that, because the Republicans would have come with sharpened knives.
Well, yeah.
Because see that tells us oodles. Because when the Republicans said they're up to something, what that means is that the Republicans were up to something, but they were pretty sure they'd get caught.
You're probably right.
You gotta get inside that really creepy, snaily, spidery place where the Republican mindset lives, and understand that they assume that everybody else is as evil as they are. Because they've been mired in evil for so long, Vince, that evil is all they know. So if you just come across with a, hey, let's have some tea and cookies and sit around, that we're all neighbors and we're all friends and we all want to see America do well and all of it, what do you want? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I guess you're lucky. But, you know, how typically Democratic of you guys to reach across the aisle and say, you know, let's find some common ground. Problem is, as soon as you identified the common ground, the Republicans would be trying to take it from you. Well, I don't want no common ground. It's all our ground.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, we're just trying to, I guess the idea, yeah, I've been kind of out of it with the local party for a little while, and I went to this meeting because, the local chairman asked me to come by because, you know, they're gearing up. They're getting ready to, you know, make as much of an effort as we can. Now, granted, it's, you know, we're in southern Georgia. We're not, you know, I don't think we have any qualms about actually influencing, you know, the state going to, you know, the Democratic nominee. But we've also got, my understanding is we've got several candidates who are running for, local state seats. We've got, we got a lot of candidates running for various state and local things this year, and, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, come Saturday, I'm going to sneak over to my county seat because Saturday is the very highly unpublicized County Democratic Convention.
Ah.
And I'm going to go over there, and now I got to get on the road and head for D.C. later that day, but if it's not an all-day affair with dinner on the ground and stuff, I'm going to try to run for delegate to the state convention so that there will be at least one voice talking about things that really matter to local communities, like, you know, getting destroyed.
Right. We've actually got somebody from our group is actually running as a state delegate, and we're trying to get the word out and everything. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to go to the caucuses and participate in that. I've got a job interview that day, but I'm actually surprised. When I quit being active with the local party, it was about a year or so ago. I was really active in it for about a half year to a year or so. And in that time that I was active, I was elected to be the party secretary and whatnot. And I also tried to start up a local chapter of the Young Democrats of Georgia. And that just, Bob, trying to get people my age interested in politics is like pulling teeth out of, you know, a tiger's mouth when he's not been doped up on something. It's just,
well, okay, Vince, let's take a quick look at that because I don't want to be accused of fogyism or anything or put any words in anybody's mouth. You said trying to get people my age interested in politics. Barring that, what are they interested in, Vince?
Smashing Pumpkins? I mean, I don't know. I'm odd in my age group, you know.
Well,
They're tied up in their own little lives. They're curious about whether they're getting drunk this weekend and, you know, whether or not they can get that hot girl down the street to say something to them. I don't know.
Okay, so that's it. We need Democratic hotties.
I don't know, the point I was trying to make, though, is, you know, when I got out of it, I really didn't think that it was going anywhere because the attendance had been flagging and whatnot.
Yeah.
I went up there yesterday, and we had a couple of kids out from the community college who were out there, and I actually gave one of them the address to the the Horns website. He may be listening right now. I don't know.
Oh, cool.
But
hope so.
I hope so. Yeah, definitely. The more of us, the better. But yeah, I gave him the web address and whatnot, and you know that's. He was saying he might be interested in maybe trying to get a Young Democrats thing going. And I was like, well, you're already farther ahead of the curve than I am. That's three here, including you. So, because it was him, the girl he was with, and then I was there. And there was pretty good attendance and whatnot. And I mean, I really got the impression that, you know, this might actually be something other than peeing into the wind this time around.
What kind of shape is your state party overall in, Vince? Do you have any idea?
The state party, I really don't have much of an understanding over. I know we had in my area, we had a guy, I think his name was Reverend Jim Martin, running for the congressional seat against Jack Kingston back in 06. Let me turn the computer off. I'm getting ding noises left, right, and center.
Oh, okay, sure.
Anyways, we had a gentleman running against Jack Kingston. I really liked him, and you know, we ran Democrats against every person who had a seat open this particular year. We had a guy running for governor. We had a guy running for lieutenant governor, who I think is actually running for a Senate seat this time around. just wasn't there wasn't much energy there, and I know that Jim Nelson had a really, really, really good campaign going, and he just didn't have much support higher up in the state party, so it kind of fell flat, and Kingston slammed him, which is a really sad thing, honestly. But
I've seen that happen before. You know, I remember when, he's a great conversationalist. When Tony Trupiano ran up in Michigan's 9th or Michigan's 11th district. I mean, he was out on the street, wearing out his shoes, knocking on doors, talking to people who, you know, the Republican incumbent didn't even know existed. And if that man had had 10 cents worth of support from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, there would be one less incumbent Republican running this year.
And you know, that is one thing about the Democratic Party that drives me insane. Is sometimes I don't think they. Sometimes I don't think they pay much attention to the local stuff, and I think that hurts them over the long run.
Well, yeah, but this is congressional stuff. I mean, I saw it here. I saw it happen with a friend of mine, a fellow named Mike Callahan. Mike ran a whale of a great campaign against Shelley Moore Capito in West Virginia's 2nd congressional district. And again, if he'd had any support at all from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, he could have won. But instead, they let him flap in the breeze and wear the soles out of his shoes, and you know, burn gas up running, because the West Virginia 2nd is just bizarrely set up. I mean, it goes from Charleston to Martinsburg if you ever look at a map, and I mean, you can't get between the two places around here. And they just let him flap in the breeze because they weren't that interested in replacing the second largest money taker from the people like Jack Abramoff. Just weren't interested. And I don't know what went on in the mind of Rahm Emanuel back then, but you know, he's out of that spot, and I hope this guy that's in there now is paying a little closer attention.
Yep, certainly.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just kind of going, oh, crazy, crazy.
But, you know, if you've got three people, get in touch with the state party, because I'm sure they have a state Young Democrats chair, and they've got a little bit of infrastructure behind them. And if they've got people who are interested, maybe they'll, you know, sort of help you out with a little resources, maybe help you print some flyers, that kind of stuff. And, you know, get out there and get people active. Because you know what, the Republicans largely ignore young people because they know that young people generally have better sense, because their hearts aren't quite as hardened as they get when they get older, and they don't go with right wing Republican policy. So if you can start turning out young Democrats, you can begin to change the tide there. Because the Republican Party is scared to death of them. Because you're the future, man. You are the future.
For good reason. It's like you said the other day, they're dying out.
Right. And they know that unless they steal or destroy everything that they hope to steal or destroy pretty darn quick, their sun is going to set.
That's something else that we got to do, too, is there's a fairly conceited effort, concentrated effort down here, basically to disenfranchise a bunch of people. They recently passed a law basically saying that when you show up at the polls, you have to have a photo ID in order to vote. Of course, the most common form of a photo ID is, of course, your driver's license. So, you know, who's the people you generally think of who don't have driver's license? Poor people, disabled people, you know, older elderly people, generally people who also, as I understand it, demographically generally tend to support Democrats. So we're also working to get an effort out now where we're trying to figure out how to best identify these people and figure out some way to get them some sort of identification or an absentee ballot or something so that they can vote, because it seems like they're doing their darndest to try and, you know, make it as hard as possible just to show up at the poll and vote this time around.
Well, I'll tell you what, I just got an email rolling in here. If you get a sec, Vince, shoot me an email, and I will put you in touch with our buddy David in South Carolina. He's very active with his Democrats there. And he just sent me an email saying, please put me in touch. We're gaining steam over here. He says, Bakari is going to speak at our free stump meeting on April 24th, and we've got a few new candidates and some young ones, too. And this Bakari is a great story. He's a 21-year-old law student, and he ran the oldest member of the South Carolina House, Representative Thomas Rode, ran him out of the primary. That's hopeful stuff. Bakari Sellers. And he will become the youngest member of the House in South Carolina. So shoot me an email, and I'll hook you two guys up, and you can chat and maybe make it to an event across the border there and that kind of stuff.
Now, where is he located at, you said?
He's in South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina, okay. See, the problem is I'm on the... I'm right on the southern end of Georgia. The closest town to me, actually, is Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, okay. You're that part of South Georgia. I get it.
We are right on the border with Florida. We're right here where they've got the Kings Bay sub-base, where they've got all the boomers they stick on this side of the coast over here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Big military town, generally very, very large Republican support, although we're thinking this time around, I know that... me and a couple guys with the party here, we've been talking about maybe setting up some flyers and whatnot. And, you know, we're trying to think, you know, like, for instance, you know, let me just pull up this email real quick, because I sent this to him the other day where I said, you know, what we really ought to do is, if we're talking about distributing flyers and whatnot, and what we ought to be doing is pointing out where, you know, McCain said one thing but done another. Like, for instance, his biggest thing is about how pro-military he is, and he fought in Vietnam and was, you know, held prisoner in a POW.
Blew up peasants and all that heroic stuff, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, if he's so military, why did he vote against an amendment providing $20 billion to the VA medical facilities?
Right. Why won't he sign on to Jim Webb's modernization of the GI Bill for Iraq vets and Afghanistan vets.
Why did he vote against providing $430 million to Veterans Affairs for outpatient care and treatment for veterans? And as a matter of fact, he was only one of 13 senators to vote against that. Why did he vote against Veterans Administration or Veterans Affairs? I forget what VA exactly stands for, but why did he vote against funding for $1.5 billion by closing corporate loopholes? He voted against funding by $1.8 million to end abusive tax loopholes. That was, you know, where money could have been going into that, and, you know, people were getting out of it. You know, he voted against...
But, the answer, Vince, is fairly... sadly, simple. And the answer is that he, like all Republicans, is a vociferous supporter of the troops, but that's the end of it. He talks it, but he doesn't walk it. Right?
He does hardly anymore.
You know, I'm sure you can't work for John McCain without a whole platoon of yellow ribbons festooning the back of your great big gas-guzzling SUV.
Mm-hmm.
But if it comes down to actually doing something for troops when they come home, it's like that right-wing jerk from North Carolina from a couple of nights ago who referred to an American GI standing guard duty, you know, sentry post for all intents and purposes, called him a two-bit security guard.
Oh, that's just nice.
Yeah. Yeah, support the troops. Yeah, that was Patrick McHenry from North Carolina, you know, from a military district in North Carolina.
Brilliant.
You know, do we have anybody running against that jerk?
Put that on YouTube and make the rounds.
That would be nice. I found it over at Think Progress. you know, one of these days I'll take a vacation and spend a couple of weeks learning all the extra stuff I need to pick up on, like how to hang junk on YouTube. Hoy.
Send it to me. I'll hang it for you.
Yeah, well, if you go over and just scroll down through, it may already be there. The question is one of blowing it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting people to see it and getting right. people to see it in his district. Because, I mean, honest to God, he stands there and you, I'm not, well, okay, I'll rehash the story a little bit. He was all pissed off because he'd taken a taxpayer-funded trip to Iraq, and he wasn't sleeping well in one of Saddam's old palaces, no less. And he said he got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and wanted to go down to the gym. So he gets there, and there's a kid guarding the door to the gym, and the kid tells him he doesn't have the right credentials to get in. And he sits there and gives this kid hell, and then demands to see his superior, and the superior won't let him in either. So he's back here stateside at some sort of meeting, probably a support the troops rally or some such crap. And he refers to this young man as a two-bit security guard. I'm still pissed off about it. Did Olbermann even catch it for his worst persons in the world? You know, usually that's about the only kind of coverage that these jackasses get in the so-called mainstream media, is to get named a worst person in the world. Katie Couric didn't have it. Charlie Gibson didn't have it. Brian Williams didn't have it. God knows it'll never see the light of day on Fox.
I was about to say.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, can you imagine, if a Democrat had said that, Vince, can you imagagine? I mean, the entire Republican Party would stop.
You wouldn't hear nothing else for the next week.
Rush Limbaugh would be on the air. The entire House would grind to a halt. The Senate would stop until that man apologized for demeaning our troops. Meanwhile, it just goes, and the Democrats... Yeah, see, that's the one kind of gripe that I've got, Vince, is we have not figured out yet that you can't bring a daisy chain to a knife fight.
Yeah, just to make your point, when we were at the meeting and whatnot, when getting back to my original story about the whole mending the fence thing, somebody made the comment, you know, well, when we're doing this, you know, we'll have to think of some way of doing it so that it doesn't seem like we're making a big deal out of it, but somebody really ought to, it should get out that, you know, this is what we wanted to do, and you know, the Republicans turned us down and said we were up to something. And one of the other guys in there was like, well, we don't want to start on the whole dirty tricks like the Republicans do because we're better than that. And I had to stop and be like, excuse me, but since Wayne's pointing out simple facts, you know, dwelling into dirty tricks. Sometimes I think the Democrats are too scared of coming off as looking like Republicans. I mean, granted, we don't need to be doing that, but we need to take the kid gloves off.
And, you know, like yesterday. That's the thing, yesterday. Hey, Vince, I got to roll along. We're at the top of the hour, but good to hear from you. And, you know, don't give up on your young Dems, man. Get in touch with the state party and see if they'll get you back a little bit.
Like I said, we've got those two kids there, so that's already two more than I was ever able to get together. So, hey, progress slowly but surely.
Absolutely, absolutely. Vince, take care. Good to hear from you, brother.
You too.
All right,
you,
bye now. Our buddy Vince calling from the southest of South Georgia. So we'll break for the top of the hour. Take a couple of minutes. Come back and talk to Bryce Phillips from WQRZ down in Waveland, Mississippi. How's that sound? You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You're sitting in your seat, and then you stand and clutch your breast. Oh.
it drives you wild along with the rest. You'll watch me singing the song. You'll see what my mouth can do. And you feel what my fingers can do. And you wish you were the one I was doing it to.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, great expectations for the second hour of prayer meeting, middle of the week here at the Horn. I'm Bob. Glad you're along. However you may care to join us, live on the live stream, podcasted, archived, listening on a million by a million different methods. iTunes, Receiva.com, Phonostar.com. Maybe listening on the website over at our buddies, WD40.com, Clyde and Wally and Dookie and the gang. This is the future of media. And you're living in the future right now. Also right now, on the line from the Mississippi Gulf Coast, station manager of WQRZ down in Waveland, Bryce Phillips. Hey, Bryce, thanks for popping by.
Hey, Bob. Hi, everyone, and hi, everybody on the Head On Radio Network. I want to say greetings from Ground Zero of South Mississippi for Katrina. Good evening.
How in the world are you? And that's a for you down there, that's a loaded question.
Huh?
For you down there, that's a loaded question.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, that is kind of loaded. The water's up in the road right now. We have Kate down here, too, been helping out, some traveling, blowing in with the breeze, trying to help out as being a good volunteer as do in service to others. And it's been great.
Kate is a force of nature.
Huh?
Kate is a force of nature.
You could say that again.
So tell me, let's start, let's back up just a little bit. What did Katrina do to WQRZ?
Well, it kind of displaced us in a way and made us go from, we moved six times since the storm. 2 days before the storm came, I took down all the broadcast equipment and moved it down to about a quarter mile from the beachfront, right in the eastern eye wall, what was going to be the eastern eye wall. We didn't know that then, but moved the entire station down there and took, my clothes, my ham radio equipment, the broadcast station, and my psychiatric records, and I went down to the EOC.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. And what followed on that?
Well, basically, I was the only communications here. The government, the federal government, and because they knew the storm was going to be so intense, they told the emergency manager director here that to leave the EOC, not to even stay. And a lot of folks didn't even come. They bailed from it, and only the volunteers, 35 volunteers, stayed with the Emergency Operations Center. That's what the EOC stands for. So here in Hancock County, because we were going to be the eye, the ground zero, they knew we were going to be the eye of the storm, where the worst of the entire intensity was. And, yes, it was. I'm very blessed to be here today. But, a lot of the government, local government stayed here because they manned the phones, and so did I. I have a commitment to, terrestrial broadcasting to make sure for what this station represented in low power. We're one of the first low powers on the air to make sure that the public was served in the public interest. So that's why I've made that decision to save myself and the radio station and go down there, try to make sure everybody else left the area. I live at about 10 foot above sea level, and I moved to 30 foot, and I thought I'd be fine down there. So that's basically what transpired on that beginning process, just a move.
No, and 30 feet above sea level wasn't near enough, was it?
No, it was not, sir. Yes, it was. The water came to our feet. So I guess I'm blessed. It came right to my feet. Now the EOC was 2 foot below where I was stationed at, where they put me in a makeshift. It was an old bowling alley that the civil defense was occupying in the rear of the building, so it goes down. But they put me up in the top, in the front, where I set up all the equipment because it was nice and quiet. That's the water came to that level and stopped right there and then went back down. So I guess I was truly blessed, like I said. I couldn't be more blessed to be here today.
So tell me a little bit about WQRZ. You said you're one of the earliest of the low-power FMs to make it onto the air?
Yes, I was number 110 in the country. We applied for our license for low-power FM and the first amateur radio organization, amateur radio base, to get into broadcasting, which is like a big no-no. Amateur radio people don't broadcast. Broadcasters aren't amateurs, and neither one of the two do public service. I did it all and broke all the rules, basically.
Lordy. So, and that was when?
That was in... that's when we first started in 2000. I got the license issued by 2001 for a construction permit. They gave me 18 months to construct, and I completed construction in 17 and a half months. I'm on Social Security. I have no money. I basically paid for, a transmitter here, a changer here every single month out of my Social Security check to try to basically create myself a job, which has never happened to date. But then we got on the air officially as number 110 in January 29th of 2003, and had just been grassroots since then. And then, of course, we built a solar-powered radio station to be able to survive any kind of just natural or man-made disaster. That was the design, and apparently it did work. So we were one out of four radio stations out of 90 across the entire Gulf Coast that survived Katrina, and the only one in the center of the slosh, of the worst, destruction. The only one in the center. I stayed online using batteries, robbed out of the cars outside. As the water came up, 3 foot outside the building, we took all the car batteries out, and I continued to stay on the air. Climbed the tower in 7-mile-an-hour winds to put the antenna back up. I guess I was off the air during the whole storm for 2.5 hours and finally got it back up and saved, a lot of people are very grateful that I was able to do that service, because that's all they had as they climbed into their attics to try to escape the water was a battery-operated radio to get the information they needed to have. Right after the storm, it was very significant. I was the only communications out of the county with the ham radios. I did all dispatch, all the AM, you know, emergency, ambulance, medical, police, fire, and all, you know, reported the Bay Bridge was out for the first 10 days after Katrina. I was the only communications here. Ran it 24/7. You know, it was just no sleep, eating a half a piece of sausage, you know, every morning. That's all we could eat. And, basically trying to get any supplies we could to continue to get, you know, to rebuild communications because everything was dumped with salt water. Everything.
And how many watts do you operate at?
I was a 100-watt station licensed originally. Now I've been granted, right after that, I was the only station operational, so the FCC granted me a special temporary authority to go up to 4,000 watts. And that's a set precedent in the country, too, as well, for emergency communications, because I was the only surviving station. They issued a power increase. We were donated some equipment to rebuild the original transmitter site because it survived. The tower I built out here by scratch survived. I poured it all, built it, 130-foot tower. And when the water was down, finally, by September 9th, I guess, we were out here already working to rebuild the station back online, and then FEMA is already ordering 3,500 battery-operated radios to give out when they gave out MREs, food, water, ice. Here's a radio, because I was the only station to get information, and then I became the number one public information source for all survivors of Katrina for the next year and a half, basically. I was the primary source operating inside of an emergency operations center in the country, the first one that ever has done that, broken all the rules to do it, I guess.
Now I'm
in studio number 6 operating in a FEMA camper with no assistance.
Oh, brother. So just out of curiosity, knowing what a pain the FCC can be, Bryce, have they given you a lot of hell about, you know, moving your transmitter and moving your tower around?
Yeah, I think, you know what, the FCC has been very, very appreciative of what I've done because nobody has ever done it in the history of the FCC. They chuckled at me, the engineer did, when he gave me the upgrade. He said, "You're kind of a purple cow." I said, "Huh? What's a purple cow?" And he sang a song.
I've never seen a purple cow. I hope I never see one, but I can tell you here and now I'd rather see than be one.
That was it. You know, you're the second person that sang it. Holy cow! Thanks, Bob.
Oh, it gets even weirder. I think I know where it comes from now, Bryce.
Where?
Back in early February, I was up at a college in Massachusetts, Williams College, and their mascot is the purple cow.
Really?
So it probably came from there. It's probably some sort of Amherst slur. But
really?
Yeah, really. But yeah, so I can. But I know what he meant. I know what he meant.
Well, then he went on to say, and it was confusing to me, and I said, okay. And I said, and then he continued to say this statement. He said, "Purple cows change FCC rules and regulations and always have." So I guess I took that as a compliment.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
And they have worked with me. I've had a special temporary authority for still to date. They're only good for 90 days. And, during the emergency, we've had it renewed 4 times, and we're still waiting to have it renewed again. They just put us in limbo because I guess they don't know what to do with us right now because we have made such an impact to change the way the communications, all that failed during Katrina. When the Senate hearings went on and they figured out why communications failed during this natural disaster, I was the only success story in the 700 pages of the Senate report. And I think that's basically what boils down to what I've accomplished to, you know, model to the rest of the country what you do, you know, radio broadcast or even what you do, all right, and internet radio or any kind of communications is for the people's interest. And it's to serve and protect them. And when radio broadcast was first divvied out among the states and went to FM2, it was for the purpose of protecting and serving in the public interest. And that's basically, you know, I'm a radio, you know, I want to say freak, but it's not. I am.
No, but that's okay. No, because when it gets in your blood, it's harder to get rid of than malaria.
You're exactly right. You can't rub it off. This is not Ajax won't rub off my infatuation with radio.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, sure.
Hey everybody.
It's Kate.
If you are hearing when you're hearing Bryce talk and he's explaining all of the things he did and all of the heroic efforts, and he's not he is not bragging. He is way more humble than most people I know. The passion that you're hearing is not for what he did, and it was so wonderful. It's that he's trying every day, every single day, to make it better, to bring it back. We're getting closer to hurricane season again, and there's a lot of panic going on because this has to be moved, that has to be moved. The funding is this, and the county is that, and the FEMA is this, and
the lack of funding is
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's horrible every single day. Just don't can't even go to bed without another problem to look forward to in the morning. And so
then you wake up to television set still in the trees, and Winnebago's in your ditch.
Yes.
After 2.5 years.
Well, you know, I went to the website over there at WQRZ.org, and you've got this rotation of photographs that...
Oh, that was from on top of the tower.
Holy Moses. Just astonishing stuff.
Yeah.
Right, and I took different shots. The earlier pictures that you first see in rotation are the earlier days when I first got here. And, you know, because I was inside, I've been embedded inside the Emergency Operations Center traveling with them for the last 2.5 years, giving, you know, volunteering for them for without compensation. I've already been named, you know, the public information officer for the county, for the Emergency Operations Center, and also the communications director now because of what I've done. You know, when you don't have anything left and you pull rabbits out of a hat during the worst disaster ever, they kind of, you know, they honored me with that. And that was very, that's an honor. All right. But then they value it, but they don't have any value. They appreciate it, but they have no value. And then it turns back into politics. So.
Sure.
You know, now that I'm back here at the station where I'm now in a FEMA camper again, doing tornado watches in a FEMA camper, you know.
It's so much fun.
It's so much fun. It's wonderful.
I don't know if I'm safe.
Broadcasting live from the heart of the funnel cloud.
Yeah.
In our FEMA trailer.
That's what we did one night. I mean, he came on the air and said, folks, it's moving in. It's moving in. It will be here in about 4 more minutes.
If you see a green woman in a black cape with a black hat on a bicycle, duck.
No,
you know?
I sure didn't see it. They didn't drop the house on me. And I hope they never do.
No, but I figured when he said it's going to be here in 4 minutes, and he kept telling everybody to seek shelter, and all that. And so I was just kind of trying to catch a nap in my truck. And when I heard him say it'll be here in 4 minutes, they should take shelter in a safe domicile. I gathered up my computer, my bag, my little purse bag, backpack thing, and my cigarettes, and came in with and my coffee cup, and came to walk in the door of the camper and said, "Is this a safe domicile,
no.
sir?"
No, this is not one. This isn't about to be flying domicile.
Yes, it will. He said, "If we have to vacate the premises, we have to go out at the end of the trailer and crawl under the deck. That's the only safe place in the."
And you
the
see
property.
The deck on the website, of course.
Yes.
I'm supposed to crawl under the deck with the snakes and dice, and I'm supposed to have the mic, and it's probably still been hot, too. Who knows? I don't know.
So, are you now, Bryce, are you living and broadcasting from the FEMA trailer? Or?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is my home, too. In a less than 20-foot, what is it, a 32-foot trailer.
But the radio station makes it a 10-foot trailer.
You know, but you got to admit, you've got a lot of opportunities for some great gnat sound. You know, the sizzling bacon on the little FEMA trailer stove and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, breakfast is good. You know, excuse me, pardon me, can I get to the bathroom, please? You know, keep it down back there, you know.
Well, so what do you do for programming, Bryce? I mean,
we do a lot of music therapy. We do independent artists, and we do blues, local artists all on Mondays, and we do blues. Blues is a really popular format here. Of course, we're all singing the blues in South Mississippi, you know. We do a little world music on Wednesday night, and then jazz all day Thursday, some rock on Friday.
But do you go 24/7?
24/7. We, you know, we weren't required, LPFM rules, weren't required to do emergency alert. And from the get-go, that was the plan because we were tied to, you know, I tied amateur radio function where I have all my amateur radio gear, the broadcast station, and all public service all in one room. It's never been heard of in the country, you know, and it's completely, you know, against, you know, National Association of Broadcasters that don't like it or the Amateur Radio Relay League that don't like it to, you know, just general constitutional issues with politicians don't like it because we're in all domains. And it's one person that's not government controlled to be able to give proper information, give the, you know, SOS means SOS. It's not misprinted in the paper as SOB anymore, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the the quality assurance of the message handling emergency traffic is the number one reason why I do what I do, because it might save my life, and that's the point. I have to save myself before I can help anybody else, and that's the first rule of thumb. And I'm sure everybody knows that, that's even been in first responders or a nurse or in the medical field or whatever that knows that. And that's the point. See, if it wasn't here for me, then where would it be? Would we rely on the big corporate America to syndicate radio shows out of New York?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the hurricane may be bearing down on you, but you can hear America's top 40s while you're swimming for your life.
That's correct. But, you know, you couldn't hear them either because they had all the money in the world and they went down, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes...
So what do you do for emergency power? I mean, beyond the scavenging batteries, what kind of formal backup do you have?
In the original design of the station, I bought a transmitter that ran on DC power. I designed it that way. So we could run 7-8 days with just two car batteries and two solar panels powering the 100-watt transmitter. And we were only loafing the transmitter. I bought a bigger one and, you know, did my research and homework. You know, put up a bigger antenna so we could drop our power, so we could draw. Basically, it's like running a CB radio on a car battery for a week and a half. All right, that's basically the design it was. Now we're a little bit more power hungry because we have a 1,000-watt transmitter line. We're radiating 2,000 watts to the community, making about 40 miles, and we're skimming the ground, and we're still number one in public service. This station, I think that's where the FCC called me the purple cow. They don't know what to do with me. I've done more public service and given more airtime to FEMA and the Corps of Engineers and for public service in the safety and protection of service of life, health, and property to the citizens than any other station in the country since FCC has been created. And that's what they told me. That's why he referred to me as Purple Cow. So move, y'all.
Yeah. You know? So you personally, Bryce, are you caffeine-powered?
No. Actually, I have ADHD with explosive personality. Does it show?
Oh, okay. Well, sometimes that's a bonus.
Hey, well, you know what? In an emergency situation,
it's definitely a bonus. Yeah.
Because who else is crazy enough to go climb that tower at 70 mile an hour winds to take down an antenna, move it, you know, and then put it back up after the storm isn't even over?
You know, you've got the perfect mix of pathologies for a radio guy.
Yeah, thank you.
But he keeps crappy books, so that's why he has to have volunteers here.
The books are fine. It's just I don't log everything. You know, I'm multitasking beyond the realm of...
Yeah.
So, Kate, he doesn't have plenty of Java, but does he have the Chesterfield Kings?
Yes, he does.
What does that mean?
We don't have...
Inside joke, Bryce.
Okay.
I'll play the song later. We don't have a what was I going to say? God, Chesterfield Kings. Oh my goodness. The station, the Enterprise, has gotten so large and so busy and so big that it really should have two full-time staff people, which is what we're hoping to get some funding for. But in the meantime, there's a lot of catch-up to do, a lot of corners to square, a lot of paperwork to do, a lot of databases.
Well, do you get any public support down there from the folks who are tuning in, Bryce?
Not really. Well, we do have a lot, some support, but the economic devastation here is so beyond.
Hard to get support from folks who can barely support themselves. Yeah,
right. They're trying to buy a 2x4, Bob, and that's what the problem is. And I understand that because I'm trying to buy one too. And I'm the last, basically, I've been serving the county for so long, sitting and taking care of the business, so I've been taking care of myself that I make sure everybody else is okay. Because I was okay, you know? And that's what it's all about, is people helping people, and that's what's going on down here. But the really sorry part is that we're still waiting, you know, because government still hasn't done what they're supposed to do. FEMA has failed, you know? And they bailed on us from the beginning, so we knew. And the one rule is, if any disaster strikes wherever you folks are at, it starts local and it ends local. In fact, Kate turned me on to you talking yesterday, I guess it was, about the mountaintop thing. Well, that's the same thing, Bob. I appreciate you for doing what you're doing in your area where you're at for really issues that affect everyone that lives there. And it starts local and it ends local. If you don't start local with activism with you, then it's not going to change statewide or nationwide. You know, unless you participate in the process at the local level. by shopping local, thinking local, spending local, and then expanding outward. And you know.
Well, exactly, Bryce, because it's fun and it's charming to play in the political kabuki theater of, oh, it's going to be him, oh, it's going to be her, no, it's going to be the crazy old guy who used to bomb peasants for a living. That's fun. But those people are not going, just with that, and that's not a criticism of the personalities involved. It's the nature of the system that we have. That is not going to be where the solution comes from. If we're going to be saved, whether it's recovery from Katrina, or whether it's stopping mountaintop removal, or whether it's preventing a giant liquefied natural gas bomb on the Pacific coast, it's going to be people doing it from the bottom up, because, you know, that's how structures are built. They never put hang the capstone in the air and build the skyscraper under it.
That's correct. It seems like it's like that, but you know what? It seems to me that media as a whole, whether it's on the internet or terrestrial, is going to the big corporations that are controlling the media, that are is lobbying in the pockets of the nationwide government. And then that means that you have syndicated shows going on thousands of radio stations with no local sources for local information, or even when a tornado warning comes.
No.
And that's the problem right there. Well, when that happens, that means we're dictated to what we can do, what we have to stand in line for, and next toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where it's going unless the people of America take back the media for themselves to make sure they protect their amendment and their rights.
Well, and I love the way that you're addressing it down there, Bryce. And by the way, I got an email rolling in from our pal Cindy up in the Great Northwest, and she says that you are her favorite Katrina success story. Out of all the,
you know, and it's not just me. There's lots of us down here. It's not just me.
No, I'm I kind of figured that would be the answer, but. You know, there's so much going on. I covered the story last week of the massive screw up of the Road Home program.
Mm-hmm. Louisiana.
Yeah, over in Louisiana, they're going to go on a $194 million collection agency spree because the people administering the trust screwed up. And in the end, their contract is going to make them some $900 million for screwing it up.
Well, you know what? It costs, what, $60,000, $70,000 to move a FEMA camper here? You know, just for one camper? Now, the camper I'm in right now, it was changed three times. So how much money did they make when they screwed it up three times before they ever got a camper here?
And when he finally got the final one, it's one of the formaldehyde ones.
Yeah, so excuse us coughing, okay?
Yeah,
and that's one of those things where you got to open the windows. I mean, does opening the windows and airing it out even help?
Yeah, I leave a fan running all the time. But, you know, summer's coming, and it's going to be kind of rough. Yeah, I'm trying to get, you know, if FEMA wants this out, they basically, you know what they're going to do with these campers when they're done, huh? They're going to burn them.
They're going to burn them, but there's a more formal name for it, Bryce. It's called destroying the evidence.
Yeah, dispose of them, okay.
They're going to destroy the evidence. Yeah, but this is early April. It's probably already warming up a little bit down there. You got a bunch of radio equipment inside a FEMA trailer. How in God's name do you keep it cool enough for that stuff not to melt down?
Well,
it's hard.
And the pictures on the website, you see the whole front of this camper was remodified. And I mean, I've only been in this camper 3 months since I actually had, you know, I was in a building, and I had another travel trailer. It wasn't really one of these formaldehyde campers. It was actually a self-contained one that was at the EOC that they basically removed from my presence. They wouldn't move it. Then they took it away. Then they said I abandoned it. And then they wanted to kick me out of this one and sent the federal marshals here. So it's, you know.
You're kidding.
It's been an adventure. It's been a true adventure. We had a bunch of folks that came down to help us for alternative spring break. You know, these kids that are sponsored by United Way to come try to help rebuild, because I just got on the premises here. So I moved the entire EOC network and the communications. Like, we're talking 75 coaxes out of a window, Bob, with 1,000 antennas on top of the building.
Jesus, Marion. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. And I moved it all for them because they couldn't afford to pay me, because I had to do it anyway. So I had to get out, too. And the lease was ending. They paid a local church, the Catholic Church here, $200,000 a year to maintain a dilapidated building. Walk in, put state-of-the-art, you know, all new upgraded electrical, you know, the AC, everything in this big building for the EOC to operate there for 2 years, and then they couldn't come to terms to renew the contract. They wanted more money. So, of course, I didn't have a lease with the county yet because I'm just a volunteer, and the radio station, too. So I had to bail before they got kicked out or the lease ended. So it was a rush, you know, all through October, November, and finally December. I got all the stuff out of the old EOC. I've been there pretty comfortably for 2 years, built the whole, I mean, I put up a whole other radio station up there, Bob. I built another tower, 80-footed tower. Two towers were there. And lined this whole big old school building that was damaged after Katrina with, about 60 antennas, I guess. It was a lot of work. And, had to remove all that with the help of my fine volunteer staff, like four people, okay, to get rid of it all, move all the EOC network for them to get them out of the building, you know, because I'm the only techie guy that's there. I'm their bench tech. And it's part of, you know, the EOC and the people that, the emergency management, when I stayed there, became my family because we almost all of us died. We had to write numbers on our hands because we didn't know when the water was going to stop during the storm. You know, because we really didn't. All right. And there was a lot of, I've been through a lot. I've seen a lot, and I understand now, you know what? There's nothing else more important than food, water, and maybe a hot shower in 3 months. And we're doing good, y'all.
Yeah, we've got a hot shower.
We're doing 7 minutes of it. 7 minutes now. 7 minutes hot water. Great.
Bryce just interrupted himself. FEMA did, going back to the blessing of the mountain the other day, how the mountaintop removal people really did some good PR for themselves. What he started to tell you was that we had a whole yard full of Penn State volunteers, and we had two of the volunteers on the board working because Bryce is out.
Oh, we just stuck him on the board and said, run it.
If you slide this back and forth, it turns your volume up and down, and he turned them loose. And so when those volunteers were here, just before they were ready to go on the air, about 8:30, and they were all fired up and the stacks were going.
This is in March.
Ready to go hot.
March last month.
And FEMA, a car drove up, and the two guys got out and said, you can't run a business out of the FEMA camper, and you have to vacate it by 5:30 tonight, or the federal marshals will come and arrest you and take you away. And they did that in front of the volunteers.
Yes, they did.
And there was a whole, and they were very, very smart.
And we were live on the air.
And they were very, very smart volunteers. They were social justice people from grad school at Penn State. And,
oh, yeah.
So FEMA came in, showed their silly butts and left, and between Congressman Gene Taylor and Tommy Longo, the mayor of Waveland, and a bunch of other people, they stuff got squared
emergency
away.
Management, yeah.
Yeah, the emergency management people, things got squared away by probably 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I just laughed. FEMA just, that was such good PR for FEMA incompetency. And
yeah, after giving them over 3,000 hours airtime on here, uncut, you know, to make sure that the public knows, hurry up, let's run this way. And then when they change the rules, let's now wait, y'all, we got to stop and we got to go this way.
Right.
The importance of whether information comes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that the public, the general public knew right then.
Yeah.
This stuff, when it came out over this radio. And that was the principle and the purpose of the station every day that I operate, 24/7. I don't care. I'll stay up all night during weather watch. And people are scared to death. When you know, you can imagine living in a tin box and you have heavy thunderstorms over you, just a heavy thunderstorm. You got five kids in here, your wife and your husband, in a little bitty camper with 7 gallons of hot water. You know, everybody's got to move around, and that will rock your world. For 2.5 years, living in that condition, as you look outside and see television sets in the trees.
It's physically impossible to be okay after 2 years of that, Bryce.
Well, that's what's going on now is now the mental health issues are really starting to take a toll here.
Yeah.
And the most important thing why I bring volunteers and Kate comes down and the folks from the University of Pennsylvania and everybody else, the United Way Project, Alternative Spring Break, all the volunteers that come here, we like to get them on the air and leave their IDs here. You know, this is your listener, WQRZ, you know, and I'm such and such a volunteer from here, because it reinforces to the local people that listen every day, that rely upon us from day one from the storm, that the people, helping people is what's making us move forward, that we can feel good and smile today, because we will get help, and help continues to come, and people continue to care instead of us being lost in the system where the worst of the destruction, it's like a nuclear bomb went off here, and it still looks like that. The trees are dropping every day. You know, they had 13 million cubic yards of debris just in this county alone. To give your listeners an idea of what intensity that is, Hurricane Andrew, that was a big storm.
Yeah.
It only produced 2 million cubic yards of debris the whole storm track. Hurricane Katrina was 13 million cubic yards of debris just in this county alone.
Dear God.
Yeah.
Well,
the looks on people's faces, there are people who have recovered, who had insurance, and
yeah.
they've rebuilt, and they're doing fine. I mean, you know, basically.
Wind to water.
Yeah. But there are people who you could just walk through the grocery store. It's kind of like it was over in Jackson County.
Wait a minute, our one grocery store,
yeah,
Walmart.
Yeah, you can just see people on the street, and they just have this look on their face, and people are still in shock, and especially if they're still living in FEMA camps.
It's like, I don't know. I think it's like the you know how they said in the combat era,
mm-hmm.
where they had the 10-yard stare or whatever they called
thousand
it.
Yard stare.
Thousand.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? We saw that after the storm, and
right.
we still
sure.
got it down here.
We still
yeah.
got it.
Bryce, how do you live?
Day to day. Tomorrow's another day, Bob.
We're looking forward to tomorrow, but
yeah.
Bryce and I are going to be on the air in the morning on the morning show, and it's something to look forward to.
Because I know that I have to maintain what I do and my mental status and all that, because if I don't feel good today, the public doesn't feel good today, and I feel like I have that responsibility to the public to make sure that I'm okay, you're okay.
Yeah, there's a reason I was never a morning drive guy, Bryce.
Yeah.
You know, I'm
not a morning person, neither am I. I'm always late for the morning show. I'm never late for a tornado warning, though, sir.
But you know what? Kate mentioned earlier that the hurricane season is not that far away, and people are probably beginning to get the jitters all over again.
Yep.
Yeah. And then with gas and the price to evacuate, you know, Bob, there's not only but one shelter here still. One shelter, our 911 dispatch is in a mobile home. Our emergency operations center has moved 4 times. I've moved 6 times. This in this county alone, this was the ground zero. It's not like the levees broke and it was a man-made screw-up or lack of maintenance problem.
Right.
This happened in New Orleans where the most of the publicity went. But see, when it's off the mainstream media, then people down here start getting even worse because they think, like, it's over. Game over. Suicide rate has increased and more than quadrupled in the last 8 months, I guess it has been,
yeah.
has been just substantial. And now the mental health issues and the drug use and the alcoholism and, you know, people are just tired. And, you know, the hurry up and, you know, with the long-term recovery problems to, you know, this agency doesn't know what the other hand's doing. Every day is a new challenge.
Is there, Bryce? Is there any kind of you know, look, we were talking about ground up, and we were talking about the need for the people to get, you know, make the change, make the need for change personal. Do you get any sense that there is any kind of a sea change, if you will, in the attitudes of the people there toward their elected representatives?
You mean change in the good old boy system?
Well, yes.
You know what? Yes, indeed. And it's slow. But I'll tell you this. It's because of the outside volunteers that have come here that have changed the face of this community completely, forever. And also the volunteers have taken that back in the sense of family and community spirit, you know, where one person, it doesn't matter where you live, we're all human beings on this planet. And that's the point. You know, if we don't help each other, we are never going to survive as a race. And that's the point.
Well, you know, with the mountaintop removal stuff, Bryce, we often say that whether you're here in Appalachia or somewhere else, we're all downstream. And in so many ways, what the Gulf Coast and Katrina have exemplified is that no matter where you are in America, you're downwind, too.
That's correct. Well, you know what? I'm sitting at, what, 3.5 feet above sea level? We have water in our road right now from coastal flooding.
Yeah.
Okay, right now, right outside the trailer here. So we're we were flooded in yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point. You're right. You're exactly right, Bob, because it all comes downhill. And then Mother Nature will blow it right back in. So, you know, you never know when that's going to come. And the scary part is that the next generation really has to be prepared for what goes on and to take active responsibility to be local.
But you're actually in a more fragile state now.
Oh, yeah.
Than you were the day before Katrina hit.
That's correct, because there's no trees left to block the wind. There's nothing left here to protect it environmentally from blowing these things, you know.
And the people who survived because they had homes, a lot of them are in FEMA trailers now. And look, I mean, I'm not trying to...
There's a timetable to get out, by the way.
Say again, please.
They're given a timetable to get out, too. So now the pressure's on to remove the FEMA campers when they're not even ready to move.
Where in the world are they going to go, Bryce?
Well,
that's a question. The money that came in from the Bush Clinton $2 billion donation, whatever, and all the grants that all the money that,
for MDA that, for Mississippi Development. Yeah.
Yeah, all the money that came from the federal government to rebuild and all that is. I mean, I don't know the new statistics, but there's just a little bitty chunk of it that's being spent on the Gulf Coast on the three counties in Mississippi, mm-hmm. and the rest of it sitting up in Jackson, and we don't.
Well, right, because I mean, you know, look back to that story we mentioned about the people who managed the Louisiana Road Home business. Just short of $1 billion was paid to that outfit. And you know what? You can sit and do the long division all day long. But you know what? I don't care how many employees they have. They don't have enough to spend $1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the privatization of disaster recovery. And obviously, the private sector has failed miserably. There are some, you know, there are some things that are associated with this, Bryce, that are endemic to the process. The government probably can't keep enough people on staff to handle a Katrina. And
oh no, you know what, Bob? I would imagine, you know, as a volunteer, and what I do, you know, with the corporation that was created, try to help myself do a job. I mean, you know what? If the local government had to retain me to do what I have accomplished in the last 2.5 years.
They couldn't pay you.
That's right. There's no price tag on it at all. And you know what? I wouldn't want a price tag on a lot of, you know, because I don't know. I'm not that way. I'm not. It's the greed and the power and the politics and all that just corrupt. And you know, where are the good people that are supposed to be there and paying attention? You know, they're snuffed or economically starved or something else is happening to them because they're getting rid of all these folks unless everybody begins the education process again to maintain that it all starts at home.
How many times have you heard me say the word genocide or ethnic cleansing?
Precisely.
It's getting more and more. I said that my fourth day down here when I was here last winter, and people poo-pooed and guffawed and looked at me silly and said, like, don't.
One more hurricane and the job's done, Kate.
And the job's
that's
done.
Right,
you're
right,
Bob.
That's
one
right.
more hurricane, job's done.
But the casinos all came back big, and the big corporations are back. Walmart was very supportive during the storm, but they are the only we don't have. I went looking for a gallon of water yesterday. I paid $2.19 at the gas station for a gallon of water because you can't drink the water out of the FEMA camper because the pipes are silky. And so I went looking for water. I paid $2.19 a gallon at the gas station, and I thought, damn, it must be cheaper somewhere else. I went to Walmart and it was 69 cents. So there's only they've got a corner on the market. There is no other grocery store on the whole
for 30 miles
from here, clear over to Pass Christian and Gulfport. And
well, they have one grocery store in Diamond Head, and that's like 15 minutes away. But
that's an upscale neighborhood.
That's correct.
It's a very upscale neighborhood. And
23% of this county is disabled, Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So all these people are still sitting in FEMA campers with and then the proposed FEMA height to rebuild that. They're changing the base flood elevation here, and they still don't know what they are. So therefore, you can't even start to rebuild, even if you have money. you know, because you have to build to the new codes or else you can't get flood insurance. And if you do build it below code, then basically with the Corps of Engineers coming in and say we're going to start a buyout program for all those people for repetitive loss, then basically they built below the standard. They're going to take your house away and oust you out anyway.
Right. And but all the corporations came back, like who owns Colonel Chicken, PepsiCo or somebody. Our dead colonel finally got resurrected.
Yeah.
Now,
a month ago?
Yeah, we have now the dead colonel is alive now, and we have a Taco Bell and a Burger King, or I don't know. But all the corporations, at Waffle House is back. That's a good thing. but
hey, Kate, I hate to interrupt you, but I don't want them to disappear if they're still there. I think we've got a caller on the line.
Okay.
And let's see if we do.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good.
Wade, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
He's my assistant engineer, Bob.
Oh, wonderful.
He was the search and rescue guy. It was me and him that were doing search and rescue during the storm. That's my number one
Wade is the other biggest volunteer hero in Hancock County. Hey, Wade.
Hey, Wade.
How y'all doing, guys?
All right.
I think we're having a great little conversation here, Wade. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I've been listening to y'all on the Internet. Just wanted to make a couple of comments about the situation with the FEMA trailers and the whole deal about that.
Go right ahead.
The federal government was kind of new to this whole mainstream disaster thing because I've been working on fire departments ever since right before 9/11, and they were never really capable of handling a disaster because they have a very few people, as far as the whole nation is concerned, on their payroll. So disasters usually are handled locally. And then a state, the city will request state assistance, and the state says, well, it's too big for us to handle, so we'll request federal assistance. Well, then FEMA has to hire people that aren't necessarily trained. They have to get them trained up to do the job that they're doing, and then once the job's done, they'll let go. So you're dealing with a lot of people that were rushed into being trained and to do a job they've never done before, so they really don't have a grasp of what's going on with the whole situation.
And to be fair, Wade, you know, part of that goes back every time we start talking about FEMA's failure in regard to Katrina, I can't help remembering that one of the first acts that George Bush did when he became president was to de-elevate the director of FEMA from a cabinet-level post to, you know, just a low-rent flunky.
Right.
And it's that kind of stuff. It's the top-level stuff that makes sure that there are people in place to do the training.
Absolutely.
That makes it so very important. And by de-emphasizing it, it was a death warrant, wasn't it?
It most certainly was. And, you know, FEMA has this continuity of operations plan, they call it, the co-op plan. And that co-op plan outlines how they're going to manage disasters nationwide, whether it be Katrina or a major earthquake out in California or, who knows, another terrorist attack, how they're going to manage the disaster. But the problem is, what people don't realize is, the burden still falls on the local people to manage the disaster. All FEMA is there to do is to assist in whatever the locale requests. They're not there to run the show. And that was the problem with Louisiana. The reason that help took so long to get there is because no one officially asked for it. They thought it was coming. In Mississippi, however, our situation was different. We knew what was coming. We had a Mississippi Emergency Management representative in our EOC, along with the National Guard, and they said, look, this storm's coming right for y'all. We're leaving. Now, that's MEMA and the National Guard. They said, we're getting out of here. Y'all should do the same. And the emergency management director had a meeting with everybody that was staying at the EOC at that time. Said, look, it's going to be bad. If y'all want to go, you can go ahead and go. And we were all volunteers. We're like, no, we're staying here with you.
Yeah, that's because, that Alamo moment with the sword and the line in the sand.
Right,
and
because if everybody leaves, who's going to save the people that were, I don't know, they made a bad decision and decided to stay? You know, who's going to go and rescue the people that, you know, made an ill-informed decision?
Or the people who just simply couldn't leave.
Right.
Correct.
Absolutely. Well, there was a lot of people that could leave, but couldn't go to a shelter because the shelters didn't allow pets. And I ran into a lot of that after the storm, saying I'm not leaving my house without my pet. So I said, here's, you know, 10 MREs, the, you know, point of distribution set up over here. You know, I couldn't waste time. If somebody didn't want to leave, I wasn't going to say, you got to leave. Here's some food. Here's some water. You know, if I can get back here, I will.
Well, let me put a question to you all. This in via email, and that is this. With regard to the demand that people get out of the FEMA trailers, I got this email that says, "Huh? Just what do they need them for? Why do they need to get the trailers by a deadline date? Who?" And this is, I guess, the central question. Who is putting pressure on them to get the trailers?
Well, I could answer part of the question. The reason that they're putting an effort to get people out of the trailers is because the federal government's afraid of a lawsuit concerning the formaldehyde issues. The Center for Disease Control has waited way too long to release the test results. An internal memo back in 2006 told the FEMA personnel that were inspecting trailers, don't go in there. It's dangerous. But they never told the general public that, hey, you're living in this thing every day and it's dangerous. But they specifically warned the people about the employees from entering those trailers, especially the trailers that were sitting up in northern Mississippi around south of Hattiesburg, around Purvis. They have like a square mile of nothing but FEMA trailers that are closed up. And they told them, you can't go in those trailers. But meanwhile, the exact same trailers people are living in every day. And people were getting sick, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to pass on the liability to somebody else. They want to blame the manufacturers. I don't know if y'all are aware, but FEMA is supposed to transition the trailer program over to Housing and Urban Development to try to alleviate themselves from any risk.
Also, they weren't prepared, and FEMA campers were not our temporary housing. They were only supposed to be originally issued, you know, for a couple months. All right, and then the more substantial housing was supposed to be issued, like they did in the past. But when Homeland Security took over FEMA, all the rules changed, and the power that FEMA had for basically disaster management, and it took away the authority that they had outright, and then attached more red tape. We had to go across more debt to get anything done, yeah. And that's basically what has happened to the system.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this in the 80s. You know, in the early 90s, it wasn't like this. It wasn't until after September 11th that they created Homeland Security and then put FEMA underneath it, okay, and then created a whole new level of government employees to sign off on something, go across somebody else's desk. So it takes longer, and it was a catastrophic event that they weren't ready for in the first place, period. So what happens when the next earthquake comes and like in the 80s or whatever, when all the bridges went down and all the interstates, okay, and they had all that catastrophe up there, or whether it's 911, or whether it's the next nuclear, you know, or man-made disaster? You don't know. So what are we going to do? It's up to us, the people, to be able to make sure that we have a plan of our own, not rely on the government to hand us something. We have to be somewhat prepared to be able to address this, because the government has shown that they cannot take care of the public in this manner.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot, Bryce and Wade, about the housing issues, and you mentioned briefly the mental health issues that are bearing down. You know, the waters themselves that got churned up brought a lot of vile stuff on shore. How are the health care needs of people being met down there right now? If at all.
Wade,
that'd be you.
Well, on the general health care, most of the medical services are back up and running. People are still, you know, able to get Medicare, Medicaid, and the local hospitals suffered a, you know, direct hit. They had 8 foot of water in their emergency room. But all of that's been repaired, and they've been up and running pretty much full status about a year to the date after the storm. They were back up and running. We still have a lack of local doctor's offices, though. But as far as a main hospital, we have a main hospital.
Are you seeing? Are you beginning to see the effects of this long-term exposure to formaldehyde?
Oh, of course, by all means. Yeah, they a friend of mine, I'm not going to say her name, but she has two young children, and they were never sick before the storm. After the storm, they moved into that trailer. They were sick all the time. And now, for the most part, they're starting to recover from that because they didn't have a very long duration of being in that environment for, you know, years upon end. But some people have been in FEMA trailers going on now almost, you know, 2.5, 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, let me take it a step further. While, I mean, as regards the formaldehyde issue, these things, it's my understanding that the formaldehyde is a function of the manufacturing process. Am I correct in that?
That would be a correct statement.
Okay.
But certain chemicals that are used to make the insulation and carpet and stuff like that have to meet certain federal levels for being installed in manufactured housing or even, you know, everyday homes and even in travel trailers. But due to the extenuating circumstances of Katrina, when they had to have so many FEMA trailers made at once, they had to use different types of foam that expanded quickly, set, hardened, and were able to ship out that very same day.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a part of the standard manufacturing process.
Right. It's not, you wouldn't see the exact same chemicals used in the making of a recreational trailer that you would in a FEMA trailer because they were made very, very quickly.
And so they didn't get to set, they didn't get to cure. I mean, for instance, I know that, I forget the name of the outfit, but over in Red Bay, Alabama, there's a place that builds, you know, loads and loads and loads of trailers and mobile home, or you know, motor homes and stuff like that. Is that where these things came from? I don't mean Red Bay specifically, but I mean, you know, the manufacturers of travel trailers and RVs and so forth.
Well, a lot of those RVs and stuff did come from reputable trailer manufacturers, but they were put under pressure to get them built as quickly and as efficiently as possible, also as cheap as possible. They didn't put tanks in them. They had regular household commodes. So they wasn't your, you know, typical trailer. They were specially designed just for their application as a emergency trailer.
Okay, so with that being the case, then is it a failure of the government to comprehend that people living in these things don't have houses yet? I mean, that it seems like there's some common sense here that's profoundly missing.
Well, you know, a lot of people didn't have insurance, and a lot of them really don't qualify for the homeowner's grant because they were renters. So they're left in a space in between. They don't have anywhere to go. They never owned a house, so they can't get, you know, the assistance program to get their house rebuilt because they never had one to begin with. But FEMA rental assistance, they're trying to get rid of everybody that's in a FEMA trailer, in the trailer parks. I know they shut down, I think, the rest of the trailer parks in Jackson County. I'm not too sure about Hancock County because I'm away at work right now.
Got one of them.
So I don't know for sure if the ones in Hancock are shut down yet.
See,
they were all supposed to be shut down by December.
What's driving me out of my mind out of this whole story, and, you know, it would be easy for me to say, wow, you know what, we can spend $100 billion a month. We can spend $3 trillion on a stupid war in Iraq. And that's easy. It's easy to make that comparison, okay? But that's the DOD budget versus the you know, HUD or FEMA budget or whatever. So, you know, some would say, well, it's apples and oranges, okay?
Well,
however, not 3 weeks ago, or not a month ago, in what was deemed to be an emergency, the United States Department of the Treasury found billions upon billions upon billions of dollars to bail out a banking house in New York City, Bear Stearns. It seems to me that did anybody ask what kind of house the CEO of Bear Stearns was living in before they decided to make the bailout? I mean, this, forgive me, guys, and this is internet radio, so I can say things like this. This profoundly pisses me off. That we can bail out the CEO of Bear Stearns, but we've still got that we've still got queries about, well, you know, did they own their home before their home blew away? Oh, I'm sorry, they were renters. Aw, tough luck. Die, okay?
You know what? The CEO of Bear Stearns needs to sell his house, and that would probably build about 15 people's houses down here in Hancock County.
Well, yeah. But you want to know the difference from Bears and Stearns and Enron? Nothing. They were both businesses. The only difference is Bears and Stearns was in the banking cartel, which is, you know, overseen by the Federal Reserve. Contrary to its name, the Federal Reserve is not actually a U.S. government agency.
Yeah, and they've got the power to print money on a whim. Yeah, I get...
We see that's where the United States lost its sovereignty. It was in 1913 when the Federal Reserve Act was passed to allow somebody besides the U.S. government to coin money. It used to be you could take a dollar in and exchange it for a dollar's worth of silver. You know, pennies used to be made out of real copper. Today, our money is completely worthless.
Yes.
It has no value whatsoever.
Yeah, there's slugs with a print job on them. Just got another email that rolled in here that says, the Bush administration cannot properly manage billions of dollars to help preserve and rebuild a wonderful area of our nation spanning two states. It won't do that, but it will make sure some effing Barney Fife, an isotope, make sure that some effing Barney Fife gets an isotope detector that can spot a radiated cat at 70 miles an hour on a highway in Washington State. Spotting that cat sure did contribute to our collective security. Way to go, fatherland security. Yeah, buddy, your tax dollars at work.
Well, I make fun of the Department of Homeland Security only because of their lack of actual commitment to supposedly securing the homeland against a terrorist threat that remains not existent. You know, I don't buy the official story on 9/11. There's parts that I do buy and there's parts that I don't, but I won't get into that. But what I will get into is a forum that I posted on topics.net. I asked a bunch of people around my community, do you think illegal immigrants should be considered possible terrorists, with the fact being that they were supposedly training supposed Al-Qaeda terrorists to speak Spanish so they could come across the border from our southern border. Now, not stereotyping or making any racial terms, but a Muslim person could be any race.
Well, yeah, because that's a religion and not an ethnicity.
Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Then again, Middle Eastern people, some of them resemble people that would come from Mexico, Central America type countries. Their skin complexion's a little bit darker, and they could pass for Hispanic. And that might upset some people. But according to the latest forum that I looked at on the Internet where I posted that poll, 84% of the people where I live think that they should be treated as suspected terrorists. After all, they did sneak across the border illegally. Now, on the other side of that, if it wouldn't have been for the illegal immigrants coming in and helping us rebuild, we'd still be 2 years behind where we are right now.
And that was where I was going to go with all of that. But 84% think that they could be terrorists. What you're telling me, Wade, is that 84% of the people that you queried who are sitting there living in poisonous, toxic trailers, who are suffering at the hands of their own government, that their own government has done a sufficient job of terrorizing them about people 9,000 miles away, that they actually have time to worry about that. And that just drives me crazy.
Well, you see, they want us to be scared of terrorists. I work in an LNG terminal. I have to be fingerprinted, retinal scanned, all of these other safety measures to ensure that I can work and do this job. I hold the top secret security clearance. I used to be a civilian contractor for the Navy working with nuclear submarines. Okay, I can pass the background check. But they're more worried about people that are coming into this country on an airplane getting pat-down searched than they are worried about somebody that's walking across the border or smuggling drugs across.
We have more cops from the
military policing the streets in New Orleans, which is a violation of posse comitatus, which they've done away with. Posse comitatus.
Yeah, the Blackwater gun roundup in New Orleans. Oh yeah. And meanwhile,
the list goes on.
Right,
and all they did is use it as a training exercise for disarming civilians. We're just lucky that where we were at, that we didn't have the problems that they had in Louisiana. We're very fortunate. We did have some civil unrest in certain areas of town, but it was very, very minor. Most people were just wanting to know where to get food, where to get water. They weren't shooting at helicopters. They weren't doing stupid things.
Well, did you catch the story, I guess it was a few months ago, any of y'all chime in here, about the local clergy being co-opted by Homeland Security in the case of emergency to encourage people to give up their firearms and encourage people to submit themselves to lawful authority?
I caught that. I was on Infowars.com, and I read the article. And basically they were telling to preach, I think it's Romans 20 or something like that.
Right. Submit yourself to the lawful governmental authority because authority comes from God. Right.
Right. The government has authority. That authority was given to the government from God. And, I mean, you know, not to criticize the Bible or anything, but...
That's okay. We call this prayer meeting, Wade. We do all kinds of free speech stuff here. We criticize crazy crap out of the Bible all the time, so don't feel bad.
I don't want to, you know, alienate anybody or...
I understand completely.
Religion.
But, you know, you've got that, you've got InfraGuard, you know, this is the stuff, and you've got people living in poisonous structures. And yet, you know, that's very depressing to me that you tell me that you asked, that 84% of the people said that they're still worrying about people in caves 8,000 miles away. I mean,
isn't it amazing?
Well, yeah, and it is proof of the... See, that's the thing. These people in Washington are very good at that kind of stuff. They're not good at dealing with real, live, honest-to-God suffering human beings suffering from real, live, honest-to-God suffering problems.
Remember, Bob, they also have the arm of the corporate media in their favor.
Right. Yeah, right. Because, you know, everything's happy. You know, I don't know. When was the last time you saw a national news crew wandering around Hancock County, Bryce?
Let me see. The first anniversary, the second anniversary, we ain't seen them since.
No. And the politics.
Well, there was that time that Bush came down when they were doing the whole bridge thing, but they wouldn't let any media ask him any questions. He was just there. Yeah, this is a good thing for Hancock County. Yeah, see y'all later. Bye.
Yeah,
that was the whole summary of the Bush thing. He did not say one thing about helping provide aid or anything. Yeah, this bridge is a great thing. See y'all later. Bye.
Yeah, it was a photo op. You know, so we will help you. We won't forget you was the title of the local paper, right?
Right.
We won't forget you with Bush's picture in the background, the brand new bridge. Well, you know, that's an accomplishment that gives us. But I'll tell you this. You know what the first thing that went in across that bay was? The railroad bridge for the commerce. That was the first thing built within 6 months after the storm. They had that bridge running and the cargo running out of New Orleans through Hancock County going up the East Coast to supply goods and materials to the rest of the country. But we couldn't even get take a car across a bridge anymore because it was still wiped away. So we had to go all the way around a 60-mile trip just to go get groceries then. And then
about
got a bridge.
What was it, Bryce? Three or 4 months before the bridge was scheduled to open, they put a ferry service in?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
It takes 20, almost an hour round trip, and, and you still have to drive through destruction land. So, I don't know. It's been an interesting effect. Now, Bob, you also asked about the environmental aspect, because we have a big DuPont plant here. And
mm-hmm.
A lot of industrial here, but when the storm came, it washed all that stuff inland. And it also, any structures that were left inland, because remember, the water came in here 17 miles inland and completely wiped everything off the map for 30 miles on the coast. All right? Even, you know, by the interstate, the water was over the overpass. And the point is that those chemicals, mixing that water with the household chemicals, the cars, you know, all these things, they came in here and did damage to the environment. That coated and tore up everything, you know, anything that was made of metal, because of the composition of the chemicals and whatever was in that water, it has stripped the protection from the nails and everything else and rotted them away. So no metal that was standing before the storm is good anymore. No fasteners in a home. So it's basically if you don't change every piece of nail, every fastener, everything else, it's going to be huff and puff and blow what you rebuilt away. And see, that's what we're now finding out, the deterioration, to build more stronger disaster resistant. How are we going to do that? If you basically, the good Lord said, start over down here when Katrina came. And, you know, a lot of folks said, well, this was done by God, or it was the devil's. You know what? It tests our faith as humans.
Well, we all know it was the gay people.
Huh?
We all know it was the gay people. The fundamentalist ministers have already told us that gay people caused Katrina, so, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we don't have to talk about
that.
That's
the new one on me.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that the Bush administration ordered the hurricane seeded so it would turn away from New Orleans and not completely flood the city, which actually, there's actually scientific studies where they actually seeded hurricanes with, I think, like iodine sulfate or something like that. They use it in Texas to make clouds that wouldn't normally rain the water crops. But they tried it in a hurricane back in the 60s, and it for a very, you know, maybe 12 hours, it made the eye wobble one way or the other by increasing the mass of that side of the storm. But there was conspiracies out there saying that they made the storm turn to avoid hitting New Orleans directly, but it really didn't matter because it was a Category 5 storm, made landfall in Louisiana as a 4, and the levees in Louisiana are only built for a Category 3 storm, so, you know, you do the math.
Right, yeah, that pesky mathematics. Getting back to some of this environmental stuff, something occurred to me, and that is those in Hancock County alone, those 13 million cubic yards of detritus.
Right.
Well, that stuff was all sluiced with all the poisons you were just mentioning, wasn't it, Bryce?
Correct. It's buried here.
Now
some of it, they buried some of it. There's so much debris here. There's piles of. See, NASA is here, Stennis Space Center, where they test the rocket engine.
Right.
Great complex. All right. Great folks over there, but that's most of it buried out there. It's in hills that are higher than 100 foot high. Okay. For a long distance, they had, I mean, I can't tell you where it all was.
Well, I think about what we learned, much to our sorrow, at a relatively great period of time removed from the cleanup after the collapse of the Twin Towers.
Right.
And we found out, you know, how poisonous that was. What about the people that worked to clean up the storm debris? That had been washed in this vile stuff. That's why I was asking about healthcare earlier, Wade, because I get the sneaking suspicion that there is stuff on down the road that some of the powers that be have not even begun to consider with regard to what has happened to you guys.
Absolutely. I mean, I think everybody after the storm had what we called the Katrina crud, and I had one of the toxic trailers, but fortunately, I was a little bit more fortunate than everybody else. I was gone for 2 months at a time and only home for a month, so my exposure to the toxic trailer was, intermittent at best. But immediately after the storm, you know, I went to the hospital because I had to get, you know, shots for hepatitis and all these other different vaccinations they're going to give you, you know, because you're in this disaster area and all of that. But, you know, maybe a month later, I just had, like, you know, fatigued constantly, headaches, you know, just body aches all over. And it lasted, you know, 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah, almost something like an Epstein-Barr or a mononucleosis where you can sort of semi-function and, yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, it's interesting because my doc up here in West Virginia, guys, I went in to see him because I was just in misery. And, you know, he's sticking the little light in my ear and, you know, running the light up my nose and looking down my throat and poking on my abdomen and all that fun stuff that docs do. And he, just in conversation, he said, you know what? He said, since Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, I have seen more of what's going on with you than I have ever seen in all of my years put together. And you know, that's why I come back to this concept of downwind or downstream. There is
everybody's downwind or downstream from something in this world. If something happens over in China, it affects us here.
Yeah.
So
and so, you know, I mean, I'm at pains. I mean, I admire so much what y'all have done because information is power. And
absolutely.
You the two, the well, you and the volunteers, all of you, have empowered people who otherwise would have been utterly cut off. And for that, frankly, you know, instead of giving Tommy Franks or Bremer or whatever a Presidential Medal of Freedom, I personally believe that folks like y'all deserve it a hell of a lot more. Because there's probably been more heroism that has happened as a matter of everyday existence down there than anything that Tommy Franks or Colin Powell or any of the mucky mucks from the Iraq occupation have ever even attempted. And that's, you know, that's the other frustrating thing about the so-called mainstream or so-called professional media. Nobody recognizes it. Because it hasn't been reported, nobody knows the absolute drop-dead heroic effort it has taken just for people to get from day one to day two.
Absolutely. But you do know that all the mainstream media could cover the Anna Nicole death for a month and a half, but they can't really cover a real issue because journalism functions on sensationalism nowadays, not actually reporting the news fair and unbiased. They just, you know, oh, this is a good story. Everybody runs to go do that story instead of doing something that actually matters, like the crumbling value of the dollar, the slow recovery on the Gulf Coast from Hurricane Katrina, the misappropriations of funds in Louisiana for the Road Home program. You know, those should all be, you know, screaming, you know, bloody murder at the money that's just getting wasted.
Hey, did you guys hear that Lindsay Lohan was caught snorting Drano in the back of a laundromat?
Who?
What?
That's a joke.
Might as well. I mean, that would probably be one of the stories that they'd spend the week on.
Would be
something as simple as that. While, I don't know if you're aware, but the national debt, out of every president all the way up until now, they've borrowed from other countries, added together, about $1.01 trillion. That's from George Washington all the way up to Bill Clinton. That's how much money that they have borrowed through the entire period of history.
Right.
Borrowed and repaid. To date, our national debt, money that we've borrowed from other countries, is $1.03 trillion. So one president has borrowed more money than any other president from foreign countries.
Combined.
Added them all together.
Yeah, combined. Right. And there's no people in the streets with pitchforks and torches. Here, you want another statistic? It's coming up on April 15th. For those of you who will be paying federal taxes, please know that out of every dollar you send to the federal government, in excess of 44 cents of that dollar will go to slaughter brown people. 10 cents will go to service foreign debt that you just mentioned, and 4.4 cents will go to education. You want to guess what's going to FEMA? It's less than the 4.4 cents. There's a hint.
I read somewhere that the... I take that back. I watched it. Aaron Russo had a film, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but he said that the only reason that we had a federal income tax that was also passed in 1913 was to pay off the debt, the interest, that the U.S. government had to borrow from the newly created Federal Reserve, and none of that money actually went to anything but to pay on that interest.
Well, I know, Kate, you were going to say something, dear?
Oh, you were talking about how much, your first stat was how much it costs to go slaughter brown people, and I thought, well, damn, they're doing that. They're doing black, brown, tan, and pink people down here for nothing. So I think that's a good deal. We can get by. We, you know, they can do that down here for.
Yeah, bargain basement genocide, Kate.
That's right. Hey,
Drano seems like a solution, though.
Well, it comes in a solution and it comes in a powder too. So yeah.
And we have Colonel Chicken with the hormone infused chicken, so we can all I don't know what increased hormones does to you, but whatever.
All I can tell you is shop local, think local, spend local, y'all.
Exactly. Hey, absolutely. Wade, thanks for joining in, my friend. I'm glad that you did.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care.
Hey, Wade.
All right. Wade?
Hey, Wade, when you get off of the water, come and see us.
Oh, I'll be back home in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okie dokie. See you then.
All right. See you, Wade.
Thanks, Wade.
All right. Thank y'all.
Bye now.
Bye.
I don't know if there's anybody out there that's burning up to ask any questions. We've gotten a bunch of emails. But there's a line open if you want to talk to Bryce and or Kate. Bryce, let me just ask you. I mean, you've got to even if they're just sort of in the nascent stage in the back of your mind, you must surely have plans for WQRZ outside the FEMA trailer. What are they?
Well, no funding. I mean, right now. Basically, you got to help yourself, be able to do what I can. Right after the storm, I didn't get a FEMA camper right away because I didn't get the $2,000 everybody supposedly got from evacuating because I didn't evacuate because I was in the EOC. So that way, that means that FEMA didn't give me a camper because I was taken care of and living in the moldy building with the old food pantry in the back that was flooded, all right, for 4 months. Well, right after that, my parents that live in North Carolina, you know, they're old. I was adopted by a Navy couple. They're wonderful, wonderful parents. They went out and bought a RV for me. They said, we're not going to have our son out there with no FEMA camper living in that molded building. So they went out and bought an RV. Well, the RV, the local church packed it up, and they put all the clothes in it, and they cranked it up like in December 05 to drive it down here. They made it 50 miles, and the motor blew up. All right? It never made it here.
Talk about born under a bad sign.
Yeah, well, basically. And my poor father, you know, he's been supporting me for a long time, and it's been the best folks. I couldn't be more blessed to be adopted by him, you know. And what it is now that I'm, you know, over the last 2 years, I've got basically lucky to escape from here for very short periods of time to either get my head together. But actually, it's going to go work, you know. I took the heads off the motor of the RV because I didn't want to see my dad waste money. I brought him back down here at a local machine shop 30 miles away, got him rebuilt, brought him back up there, did this back in, and then it sat for another 6 months. It's still up in the yard right now. I just got the heads on right after Christmas this year. And basically, I'm going back up there to go get the RV to stick the whole entire radio station in it. And that's the future of the QRZ at the moment, because that's all we can plan for, because there isn't anything else to plan but to crank it up and run when the next one comes.
Because it's coming. Because and you said when the next one comes. I noticed you didn't say if the next one comes.
No, I said when.
Yeah, when.
And that's inevitable. You know, right now, the insurance has quadrupled, all right, for anybody that is in a home. And this is the third year after disaster, so hopefully, I don't know if we'll make it through the season without it, but a lot of people, this is going to make or break what happens to people rebuilding here on the coast that can afford to. Basically, it will change the entire demographic to high upper-level condo living and casino development, and Atlantic City Junior here is what's going on right now.
And you know what, Bryce? I mean, you can take a little bit of comfort in this. When another hurricane comes through and there's upscale development down there, there will be a response. And it will be a speedy response. And it will be an effective response.
I don't know about that, Bob, because most of the folks, you know, here, it's basically everybody that's low income can't even start to rebuild. They're all gone, or they're going to.
Well, yeah, I didn't mean they'll get a speedy response. I'm talking about the people in the casinos and the upscale developments.
Yeah, well, it's still going to be the low income. And the folks that are suffering or senior citizens that are on a fixed income that are still getting into a position where they're not going to survive again.
And let me just take a guess here, because, I mean, you know that what we do here is political, and I can't help that. It's part of our design. It's part of our mission. Let me just take a guess here. You tell me how far wrong I am. You just mentioned tripling and quadrupling of insurance rates.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I will bet... And I am completely ex cathedra on this. I don't know when the I will bet that in the fairly recent past, the Mississippi State Legislature met in session. I will bet that they were concerned with a constitutional amendment that declares a fetus to be a person. I will bet that the Mississippi legislature concerned itself increasing and toughening standards for the last abortion clinic left in Mississippi. I will bet that the Mississippi legislature at some point passed about a dozen support our troops resolution.
Yeah.
I will bet that the Mississippi legislature did not utter one pathetic peep directed toward the likes of Snake Farm Insurance and All Snake Insurance and Nation Snide Insurance and the rest of that filthy crowd. Would I be correct?
Dickie Scuggs was working on that.
Correct. You are absolutely correct.
And in November of this year, you will have an election. Maybe you'll have touch screens, or maybe you'll have electronic screens or whatever. Maybe in a few places there might be some paper ballots.
Oh, it used to be. We were the last county here to have paper ballots, Bob. We still had hanging chads until right before the storm.
And at that election in November 2008, you're going to wind up with choices between bad and worse.
Yes.
And all across Mississippi, at least from my political viewpoint, people will once again choose worse.
Yes.
And when the next hurricane comes, we'll hear a lot of the same horrible stories.
Yep.
And a lot of the same heartbreaking inquiries. And there's
another 10 years will go by.
And another 10 years will go by. And at what point in time, Kate, Bryce, either one of you, both of you, at what point in time does the rice and beans crowd recognize that they actually have the power to change things?
It's all through education. That's why I continue to stay on the air, Bob. That's why I continue to persist. I have like $6,000 in my account left, and that was given to me from Bill Moyers, from all the great folks across the country, because Bill Moyers cared about the story about big media control and putting the power back to the people for grassroots radio for what it was designed to do. And you know what? I don't know. I don't know when it changes, because everybody's just so sick of trying to play the run and hide and shell game. To let's run this way. Oh no, we can't run this way anymore, because that way is not a healthy way any longer. So let's run this way now. And that's what it is. It's been that constant change and detour every day. It's like, you know, how many people have to die at a red light, you know, where there's a bad intersection before they actually put up a red light? Why can't there be forward thinking in America for anybody to think, hey, this could be a problem, we recognize it before another person dies, before we actually correct the problem?
You got to care about the person that's dying first.
Well, you know, apparently it's the large population of people that have to die first. Not just one person. It has to be thousands of people to die before we actually make a difference. Now, why is that?
But that's already happened, Bryce.
I know it's already happened, but you know what? The next future is the next generation, because what do they think? It's the next generation that I'm still here for, and trying to educate them to say, hey, you can make a difference. You can fight City Hall, because we created City Hall. We created it in this country. What happened to patriotism? Not in the Patriot Act, but the patriotism for what it truly meant when this country was developed in the first place. That means people like you, I, the media, and folks, and outspoken citizens that wanted to do something, that cared about their community, stood on a wooden box, and they stand in front of City Hall, and everybody gathered around in the whole town to listen to what the soapbox was this week. And that's how we got to where we are, you know, through the early centuries of our country.
One of the most effective tools I've seen in the 2 years that I've been coming down here is I hear from every single person who gets off of the metaphoric bus, oh my God, I had no idea it was this bad. Why don't we know about this? Oh my God, this is awful. Why haven't we heard? I have heard every person make that remark in some way, shape, or form. And when we have a whole yard full of social policy grad students from Penn State, or we have them from New Hampshire, or we have
We have
young people coming in to do alternative spring break, and they fall in love with the Gulf Coast like I did, and they
it's
come back.
It's the people here that they fall in love with.
Right.
That's what
and,
it is.
And they come
Sense
back
community.
Because they know they're doing some good. So they come back during the summer, and they spend the entire summer. We have put hundreds of teams of NCCC AmeriCorps kids through here, 18 to 24-year-olds. Those people know that they can make a difference, and it will be them who leave this little microcosm that we have down here to go out into the community, and they will not forget us. They cannot forget. You
Never.
Cannot forget.
No.
It's just like radio. Once you get bitten, you've got the virus, and it's, so I see the young people who are coming down here to work to do volunteer work of whatever capacity. When they go home and they talk about it in their seminars and in their churches and in their families and in their peer groups, that word, it's got to have some kind of an effect. I don't quite know what is going to happen. But now I wonder if you don't understand a little more, Bob, why I could give a rip what happens in this election, because nothing, it does not matter. David says it's all wrestling. It don't matter who's going up. It's Pennsylvania Avenue.
Oh, I have never not understood, Kate.
Okay.
And it has its own importance. Okay. Let me be clear about this. We've seen what the Bush administration did in terms of responding to y'all, and we saw how they responded to the poor little Bear Stearns CEO with his nose pressed up against the window pane. Let me make it abundantly clear. It does make a difference. How FEMA responds to the next hurricane will largely be a function of how the next chief executive views FEMA.
Yeah, and cares about it.
And the fact of the matter is, John McSame is an extension. With John McCain in office, you will have a similar, if not more pathetic, response to the next one than you got out of the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
I think he needs to come live at a FEMA camper for a week.
That's torture.
Well, he'd come barreling out of there swearing like a sailor and probably calling his wife the C word again if he did. I mean, this is a guy. Let me just throw this out there for you. This is a guy who is so divorced from reality. I mean, bear in mind, he doesn't know the difference between a Sunni and a Shia, right?
Yeah.
And that may seem a long way away from the Mississippi Gulf Coast, but I'm about to bring it a lot closer to home.
Yeah, not really.
This guy doesn't know the difference between a Sunni and a Shia, but by extension, his ignorance is even deeper. He was talking about making an outreach to what he referred to as the black vote. All right? And in so doing, he told people that he was going to go. This was on Tavis Smiley's show. He said he was going to talk to African American voters by going, and this is the quote, "All over this country, I'm going to go to South Philadelphia. I'm going to go to the Black Belt in Alabama." That's the quote. Now, if you want to talk to African-American folks in Philly, you don't go to South Philly. Okay, because that used to be the Italian neighborhood, and now it's the Asian and Hispanic neighborhood.
And it's where the Blood Bucket Tavern is, you know.
Okay, but for me, I read that, and I read through like 900 blog responses to this story, and nobody picked up the other big old gaffe. Remember, he's going to the Black Belt of Alabama.
Yeah.
This dumb son of a bitch, see, I can say that on the internet, Bryce, thinks that the Black Belt of Alabama is called the Black Belt of Alabama because of all the black people in it.
Yeah.
It's called the Black Belt of Alabama because you can put a shovel in the dirt and bring it up, and it is just black as tar. It's black as pitch, and that band extends over into Mississippi, too.
Yep, it sure does.
So would he go to the Red Belt?
Rich Doyle, buddy.
Would he go to the Red Belt in Georgia then?
Yeah, he'd go to the Red Belt to talk to the Knicks. And I guess he's, you know, I mean, and you know, extended at your peril. But, yeah. this guy thinks they call it the Alabama Black Belt, the Alabama Black Belt, because of all the black people in it.
Yep. And you said it does matter. We have to have somebody in the executive, and we have to have somebody in the White House. And I think
I still want him to come to the FEMA camper, you know, to see how it is. Because you know what? None of the candidates have come here to see what's going on.
The only person who even got within hollering distance was John Edwards.
He didn't even come here.
He went to NOLA. Everybody knows that.
Yep. Right. Well, that's where the population is.
We have to have somebody on the Pennsylvania Avenue address to pick up the resident occupant mail. So we just have to have somebody in there. You can't leave those houses sitting vacant because the insurance rates go up on the fire insurance. So that's why it's important to put somebody on the Pennsylvania Avenue address. So
otherwise, black mold might grow.
Well, you know why they call it black mold, Bryce.
No, it's Katrina Mold Cologne, Bob. Reclassified a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I know. And I hope you both understand. I'm not making light of the situation.
No, I know. Well, you know what? It makes it, you know, laughter is the best medicine, Bob. Because, you know what? That's what a good chuckle every day is what makes me get up tomorrow. And then chuckle again. Because the point is that the next generation needs to understand that they have to participate. They have to. It's up to the American public to teach their family and the next generation that it is important to talk about politics. It is socially acceptable. It is not a dirty word in the FCC language, and that debating is good and healthy in this country. And that's what's going on here. Is nobody wants to debate. You know what? Bad laws need to be repealed. Does anybody repeal bad laws? No, they just create more ones
they try to make another law to fix the bad law instead of just repealing it. Yeah, it's the same mindset, and it even rolled out of the Los Angeles Times today. The Los Angeles Times had an editorial stating that Congress had to pass a law to stop funding the Iraq occupation. No, they don't. They just have to not pass another one.
That's right. But until more people are educated about the process, we will always be in this mindset of consumer-driven, big corporate America married to government, which is a Mussolini thing, is it not?
That's what he said it was.
And that's why Bryce is so passionate about WQRZ, because this is totally without corporate cooperation.
Yeah.
Much purple cow ain't even close.
I know a little bit about not having any corporate backing.
It's okay. You know what? Life goes on, and you know what? Life's too short. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow anywhere. You can go around the corner and get smacked by a truck and be disabled for the rest of your life, and then you have to deal with that. So if you didn't think about those issues before, you just don't know. You know, life is full, is a bowl of cherries, and you're always given, you have to savor every bite. You know? Whether it's in a formaldehyde issue trailers, Katrina Mold Cologne, 7 gallons of hot water, come on. It doesn't make a difference. You know what? Life is good.
And we always have
to change the future for the difference. What else is the purpose of us in the first place as a society, human race, right? It's no different than Darwin's theory that the strong will survive, but it doesn't mean money's going to do that. It means that we are educated enough to get along with each other and get on with things and try to find solutions instead of covering up other things where greed and power and guilt get in the way.
And we don't have a day go by. We always have to have humor. And
yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Bryce and I have gotten very good at having debate without rancor.
Yeah. It's great. You know, without the Britneys and whoever else is in the national media, because that's important. Come on. You know, what's important is what's going on in your street corner, whether you have a sidewalk to walk on, to press the button across the street, okay? Whether, no matter what color, creed, race, or anything else you are, the whole universe, I mean, the earth is human beings and everybody in it, is not going to survive if we don't find a way to not only the environmental factors, the social factors, get along, you know, and basically there is, man created a lot of rules that complicate just the 10 basic simple laws. Isn't that correct, Bob?
Well, yeah, and most of those laws were created, Bryce, by virtue of the old W.C. Fields line, where I'm a big fan of Fields. He's one of my favorites. And toward the end of his life, and I've told this story before, one of his friends drove by. Fields was, you know, nearing death. He's sitting on his porch with a blanket over his lap, and that wonderful old atheist was sitting there reading the Bible.
Yeah.
And I said, Fields, you old atheist, you, what are you doing in the Bible? And Fields calmly looks up with his little pince-nez glasses over the bridge of his nose, and he says, looking for a loophole. And most of the laws that have screwed up society have been a function of not the creation of proscriptions for the people making the laws. They've been a matter of creating loopholes.
Well, you know, I think the most important thing, what do you do is you're raised by your family, and every family, and my parents, you know, my dad always told me when he was younger, I had to work five jobs to survive and make a living, and you must do the same thing as I'm turning to an adult, you know? Well, you know what? What else is the point? That's right. Well, all life is we continue to maintain for the next generation to make it a better place to live, that we didn't have to, that they don't have to suffer the wrath that we did during our lifetime. Isn't that the point?
Yeah, and sad to say that thanks to everything that's been done to this country, ours, I assume you're somewhat close to me in age, Bryce.
Yeah, I'm 42.
Yeah, I'm 45. Okay, so, yeah, we're right. Ours is the first generation that's not going to be able to say that about our kids, that we left it better for them than it was for us.
Yeah.
We've crested, and now we're just running to stand still, and that's a damn shame.
Yep.
But for you and folks there in places like Hancock and Jackson County, running to stand still has a lot more ramifications to it than it does for a lot of other places in the country.
Yeah, respiratory problems. We run and get out of breath because of
we turn the fan on.
Well, and that's the point. And that's and just to give some idea of scale, Bryce and Kate, the rest of the country is running to stand still, and theirs is a booger of a struggle. And what constitutes running to stand still for you is something that is nigh unto impossible. And that's the beautiful thing about the story of you and the volunteers and folks like Wade and Kate and WQRZ in general, is that you refuse to be defeated in that nigh impossible struggle.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know what? We're not victims. We're survivors, Bob. And that's the point. I will refuse to be called a victim ever again.
Right.
Ever.
No,
let yourself be one.
Well, yeah. If you're fighting back, you're not a victim. Even if you lose, you're the guy who lost, but you're not the victim.
That's correct.
Victimhood has a cachet of passivity to it. Mm-hmm. And you guys are not passive. Mm-hmm. And no matter how screwed up the Mississippi government is, no matter how much of a horse, how much of a the northbound end of a southbound horse Haley Barbour is, no matter how rotten the overall government is.
Oh, wait, Bob. Remember, he gave me the Volunteer of the Year award for 2006.
Yeah, Haley did that.
Was there a check? Great big check, yeah. Like you get in a golf tournament? I want one of the big checks.
He gave me actually, he wasn't there to give it. His wife gave me the award because he couldn't make it, and he gave me a nice poster.
He sent Marcia, yeah.
Did he give you a Laurel and Hardy handshake?
No, he wasn't there. Never met the man.
Marcia came.
Didn't get a dinner.
No.
But it was an honor.
Well, it is.
It is. It's an honor. You know, it's a sense of accomplishment for me. You know, but that's the problem is...
You were noticed Bryce, you were noticed by a Republican politician. Do you understand the quality of the quality of microscopy that he had to engage to even realize you exist?
Let me go a step further, can I?
No, please.
You know that, Bob, I won the Phoenix Award, too, from the President of the United States for the SBA, Outstanding Disaster Recovery by a Volunteer for 2006 as well.
He even got a haircut and wore a tie and a shirt.
Was there a big golf check for that?
No. Oh, wait, yes, there was, from Walmart.
Yeah.
At the SBA conference, okay? Walmart. gave me
the small business admin gave you $2,000.
Wait, now they gave me $16,000 and then they sent me a 1099 for it. Okay. just letting you know, I gave it all to the corporation. I didn't take the money. I gave it to the corporation because I can't get kicked off Social Security for $16,000 to lose my Medicaid, so I can't take my medication today to be okay to even function. To try to help myself do a job. So you would think, like, hello, you know what? Welfare to work. Hello, I created myself without government entity and also did what I did for my own self-accomplishment. But you know what? It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
You know, Bryce, I got to tell you, over here, and it doesn't happen very often, but it just did, over here to my immediate right, I keep a little mini bottle of tequila with maybe a finger of tequila in the bottom, and it's a personal sort of in case of emergency pull cork kind of thing. And you just now had my hand on that damn cork.
It was the Walmart check, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was the daggum Walmart check. And the Walmart check had me reaching. The Walmart check had me reaching. The 1099 put my hand on the cork.
Oh, wait. We'll make you put your hand on that cork again. Remember, I had a very limited amount of flood insurance, $15,800 I got for my house, okay? When I got the check, I deposited in the bank. It bounced. Payment was stopped.
Oh, pluck me running.
Are you grabbing that bottle yet?
I just got a straw for it.
Okay, well, there's no lie, okay? It did. It bounced. And it cost me $5 when I deposited the Navy Federal Credit Union. And they corrected it. I got it back. But, I mean, it bounced. It still cost me money to cash a check for FEMA for flood insurance.
And you live in a state where you can't sue insurance companies.
That's right.
Jesus, that's just precious, Bryce.
Hey, life is wonderful. You know,
I mean, I'm not. I hope you understand. This is laughing with tears coming down the face. This is not laughing at.
No, Bob, it's all good because you know what? If I didn't, thank you very much, Bob, and your audience too for listening because of the reason that it explains. And this is just if you don't have a real case scenario, how do you learn?
Yeah.
Or how do you get that experience?
Well,
I'm suffering through it, but you know what? I'm happy. I'm okay. Okay, and that's the main point. That it's the people from throughout the country that have continued to, you know, press forth with showing the compassion. And it wasn't, you know, when Bill Moyers went on TV and talked about what was going on down here or anybody else, any publicity, it was the letters that people sent that are more valuable than any piece of gold, silver, or any possession, because you can't take it with you when you're gone.
They were wonderful letters. God, it was wonderful.
It was wonderful, and that's what keeps me going is that. I mean, there's also people here that FEMA forgot their name. They don't even have a number, you know, that are still suffering here.
And so by way of survival, you adopt the philosophy that every day with your chin above the waterline is a damn fine day.
That's right. And if we can laugh and make fun of each other, and then we go pay 75 cents for the newspaper, and we read it on the air every morning and laugh our asses off.
Hey, Bryce, do you stream your stuff?
Yes, I do. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. WQRZ.org. In the middle of the home page, go down to the middle of the page, and don't go to the OOG.
You know, it ain't every day that I plug the competition.
You go to the let me finish for people who are interested. You go to the MP. Bob interrupts me all the time.
Okay.
You go to the MP3 stream to link up to the show. Don't go to the OOG one because it's two bars. I don't know. You can't.
It's an auction. We have MP3 stream.
Okay, cool.
And it's WQRZ.org.
Yeah,
you're on every morning.
Yeah, 9 to 11 a.m. We have the late morning show.
Central Standard Time. And sometimes if we can quit arguing and fussing about the facts and who's going to go buy the newspaper and all that, we get on about 6 to 10 minutes after the hour because we've got business.
And I'll tell you, next when Kate finishes her tour here on the way out of her tour, Bob, we'll get you on the air and do it live on here, and we'll try to take phone calls through this system, too.
I promise not to use any of the fun words because I'm a real live...
There's only really two words. There's the S word and the F word, and that's it. Those are the only two words for non-commercial, you know. You can get away with everything else on public radio.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. Because,
yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit like you. I mean, I got bit by that radio bug, and I've never been cured. And I was 15 when that happened, and it's not getting any better.
Right.
I'm only doing this because they won't let me play on the terrestrial bandwidth, and it's not because of the fun words. It's because of the really dirty words like empowerment and filthy Republicans and, you know, stuff like that.
Well, he knew that. You know, after Katrina, boasting of what we did right here created. I was honored to have my call letters posted in the new in a bill from Congress, Senate Bill 2095 or something, I think it is, where they used me for example to create thousands of more low power radio stations like mine because of what we have done. So to give the power of the media back to the public. I don't know what your feelings are about that, but it does create more opportunities for folks to do.
Oh, I'm all over it.
Yeah. Okay. It was really, that was an honor to be basically used as the low power poster boy. You know, but you know what? Low power is not enough.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're still on a milk carton, Bryce.
Yeah, I know, but I'm still in the air too, Bob.
Yeah,
I'm still in the air. And I'm going to be on the air, and nothing's going to take me off that, not even another Katrina.
Hang in there, brother. I tell you what, I have loved this conversation. Thank you for all the information.
Okay.
You've got a home here. Anytime you want to, dial in, and you know, if you want to wear out, if you've had a really, really rotten day, and you want to use some of the fun words, you know, go right ahead.
Help me, Bob. I'll come up there and come put my hand on that bottle.
Hey, Kate, really thanks for lining this up, too. Right. I mean, you've done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
And just remind people to tune in to WQRZ.org.
Look, she has to prove it. You know what? Thanks, Bob. We appreciate you.
You guys are the ones that taught me. I'll catch you all in the ether somewhere.
Okay, Bryce, it was a joy.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Well, you know, I just got humbled. I really did. I sit here and I think sometimes about what it takes to keep this going. I got it easy. I got it real easy. Ain't got no tower to climb. Ain't got no water around my ankles. If I want my shower to last 30 minutes, I can. If I want to cook me some breakfast or some dinner, I got another room besides this radio studio to do it in. I got it real easy. Still takes a lot of financial help to keep us going, just like it takes financial help to keep Bryce going. But you know what? That's what you get when you want to play among, when you want to go out and start doing the truth thing and the fact thing. Because you know what? Corporate America is not interested in either of them. And for that matter, while we're at it, let's be honest, rich liberals don't care much about it either. The only people who care about truth and about facts are you guys. Working people. People who bust it every day to make it go. Your world, your lives. You care. Because you're the real America. You care because you're sick to death of being spoon-fed pablum, you know, gone rotten pablum, E. coli pablum, from the NBCs and the CBSs and the ABCs and the GEs and the Jones Radio and the Premier Radio Network and the this and the that and the Sinclairs and the Clear Channels and because you hear it and you go, oh my God, this sucks. And that's how you wound up here. Because we may fiddle fart around and fool around and carry on and such. And sometimes some of the fun words sneak out. But you know what? If you know nothing else, you know one thing about what happens in organizations like this one and Bryce's. You know that it's real. No wrestling here. Never been, never gonna be. And for those of you waiting to hear the archive of Mondays and Tuesdays programs, I'm hoping that they will go up ASAP. There were some technical issues, but they'll be there. Thank you to all of you. Thank you for sharing reality with us. Thank you to John Fox and Peter Godbold, respectively, our chief engineer and our IT professional. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. Another one of this little band of people who are committed to facts and truth, and above all, reality. My countless, endless thanks to the bravest folks I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You're all downstream. Be part of the solution. Go to Coal River Mountain Watch and join up. It's cheap. And it really means something when you do. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
We'll be right back. Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
And good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 98 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. Thank you. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, January the 10th, 2008. So if you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Thursday, which is January the 10th, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and speak to myself and the guest I'll be introducing shortly. If you are not listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Thursday evening, you're listening to one of our archive streams, and nonetheless, you are welcome, and thank you for joining us. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. Or if you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or buck. That's 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do attempt to check the emails during the breaks when we take a break, Bob would say. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find the links to all of the guests and to the audio archives from the past shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active, and you'll find links to the Head-On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming there and all of the other hosts. I'm only a small part of the Head-On Radio Network. There are links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music on the show. I am so glad to be back this evening. I've been missing in action for a few days. It's a long story, and I'll tell you about it later in the show. But first things first, I'd like to introduce our guest, Shara Greer. Now, Shara has actually been on the show before. Shara was on the show in July. And if you'd like to hear that original interview, just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and click on the July calendar. She's in the July 24th box there. And you'll find the archive. We went into great detail about the services and functioning of Service Members Legal Defense Network. Tonight, Shara is going to give us an update regarding what's going on in the news lately. You know, we've had just recently Darren Manzella, who was on 60 Minutes about 3 weeks ago. It's caused quite a stir in the media. The media is finally recognizing that LGBT, the mainstream media, that is, that perhaps we exist. If you haven't seen that video, there's also a link there in today's Strictly Confidential calendar. Now, Shara joined SLDN in 2001 as the Director of Law and Policy. She manages SLDN's legal services, which includes lobbying and watchdog